You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
Children International is working to end child poverty around the world by giving kids access to a safe place, a team, and a path out of poverty by focusing on health, education, empowerment, and employment. Together with people like you, we're more than a nonprofit. We're a powerful force for change. Learn more at children.org.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, November 4th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. But I gotta say, nobody's feeling that casual. We're 4 days away from the presidential election, an election that will determine control of the Senate for 2 years. One which will probably just muddy the House. It's the House of Representatives. And one which will, further bring into relief just how insane and off the rails the Republican Party is. Today on the program, Cliff Schechter will be here. And also, we are jam-packed with fun in the free half. You recall that throughout the Republican primaries, there were pranks basically pulled on all of the people running in the primaries by two guys known as the Good Liars. They've got a movie out that encapsulates those pranks. And they'll be on the program today. But also, partly as an intervention, Andy Kindler will be joining us. I'm not sure exactly what the intervention is. We're stopping him from being on Twitter, or he's stopping the country from careening out of control.
But let's just try to make some Dennis Miller jokes together.
But as long as we all can come together and make fun of Dennis Miller, we'll be fine. All that and more on today's program. I've got a lot of things to talk about today, and Cliff and I are going to get to a bunch of them. One thing, though, I should just this is pretty amazing, and I just saw this a couple hours ago. The entire internet in Liberia has been taken down by a cyber attack. Why does that matter? You know, when you see something like that, it makes you wonder if it isn't. Now, this apparently is the same type of attack that was used in shutting down Netflix and eBay. The server attack we had like a week or two ago, right? Yeah. A denial of service attack. But you see stuff like this and you wonder, like, is somebody just practicing? You know, I don't know why Liberia would necessarily be the best place to practice or a place to practice, but... So, you know, who knows? We're 4 days away from an election. Obviously, a lot of people have already voted. Probably by Election Day, maybe one-third of voters will have voted. It's conceivable. We, of course, have the traditional U.S. intelligence warning of a possible al-Qaeda attacks in the U.S. on Monday and Tuesday. And then we have the virulent attacks that are coming from Republicans on the foundations of our government, which we will get to. But first, some good news. Ladies and gentlemen, we, as of almost the beginning of the show today, we were in day four of deliberations of the federal criminal trial of two defendants, Bridget Ann Kelly and Bill Baroni, both officials in the Chris Christie administration. Bill Baroni, of course, was at the Port Authority in New Jersey. Bridget Ann Kelly was his assistant chief of staff. They both, at the very least, Bridget Ann Kelly testified that Christie knew. A prosecution witness, David Wildstein, testified that Chris Christie knew about what he has subsequently lied to, at the very least, to the public, I imagine. He hasn't said anything to the FBI about this. Maybe he did. I don't know. But there's what's interesting about this is that Chris Christie, as a former U.S. attorney, knew that not just by running in the primary, but by immediately inserting himself into the orbit of the potential winner, Donald Trump, that he was so close to a presidential campaign that he would not be indicted. And if Donald Trump won, he probably would be appointed. At one point, he thought he was going to be VP for about 15 minutes, it sounds like.
Yes, hey,
and if this was thought of protect him. Now, understand, we don't know what the sentencing is. It could be anywhere from 1 to 3 years for either one of these. I mean, it could be up to 20, but I think U.S. attorney has made it clear that it's not going to be that high. David Sampson, the chair of the Port Authority in New Jersey, was already convicted for his the kickback scheme he had with, I think it was United Airlines, to create a specific flight for him to get down to his weekend house in South Carolina. And he awaits sentencing in December. So in other words, over the next 45 days, these three individuals who are facing at least a couple of years in jail each are going to have a long time to think about what they might have to offer as a way of getting out of that prison sentence. So to sum up, Chris Christie, bye-bye.
Way more energetic this time. Wow. I've never seen it like that.
Not better, but more energetic.
No, not better, but much better spirit. Form horrible, spirit great.
All right. That was not my sultry one. That was the more active dance that I did.
Wait, the other ones were your sultry runs? I'm going to go throw up. Look at that tweet. You just got, I mean, I don't know.
What did I do? I just got a tweet?
You got to look at that tweet.
Well, the funny thing is, as soon as we got, as soon as this came up, we got a tweet. Oh, we won't do that. Now, I will say this, and I won't get into too much details about it right now, but for Halloween,
that's so good.
I went as Chris Christie in 3 months from now. It's not something that I can tweet out, the pictures of me. I can't. I just can't. Members, I think we're debating this, and because people are like, I don't know if you should do this. Members are probably going to get an email, maybe for the holidays, with a picture of me, and maybe when he gets when they indict him.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a holiday
but
thing. It's a little bit more morbid than that.
It's only going to be for members. All right. But we'll talk more about that. It's going to be like a member bonus. Huge bonus. It's a bonus. Periscope data is the ultimate tool for fast and flexible data visualization. Why run slow queries on old spreadsheet data when Periscope data allows you to run, visualize, and share analysis over billions of data rows in seconds? Answer the big questions instead of running routine SQL tasks again and again. Periscope data is fast, powerful, and effortless to connect. They have blazing fast query execution, fast workflow, and fast sharing. What more do you need? There's no setup cost, no time. Traditional BI tools take over a month to get your ETL configured. With Periscope, you can get trialing and delivering insights as soon as you plug in your credentials. No giant statements of work, no top-heavy meetings, just you and your data. Think about it. Plug and play, no uploading. Analyze the data 150 times faster. Never run the same query twice. Slice the data any way you want. Periscope data is a powerful and intuitive tool that will bring your SQL analysis to the next level. You can get a free trial today by going to www.periscopedata.com/majority. That's periscopedata.com/majority. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the great Cliff Schechter will be joining us. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. It's Casual Friday. Like I say, obviously, people a little bit on edge. At least that's been my observation. But nevertheless, is there anything more soothing, more calming, more centering than this little song?
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Right? Right, ladies and gentlemen? Right or wrong? Right? Right? We are back. It is the Majority Report, ladies and gentlemen, and it's Cliff Schechter.
Why, hello. How are you?
I am doing great. How are you doing, Cliff?
Better than a couple of Chris Christie aides, I'll tell you that.
There are some people who, there's some people like when the Cubs win or the Red Sox win the World Series or the Pats win a game, I immediately text. The Chris Christie thing, like you're high on the list as soon as you hear something like that. Was the first, like the first thing after I read about those two was the email I got from you. Like, we got to talk about this.
You and I had the same level of excitement because they were the two aides we're now talking about. Mr. Baroni was the head of the Port Authority, and Bridget, what was her name?
Kelly.
It's escaping me. Thank
Bridget
you.
Bridget Kelly.
Yeah, deputy chief of staff.
Yeah,
they were found guilty of all seven charges. And we know that, at least in her case, she has said that Chris Christie knew about these things. We know that the other aide, David Wildstein, said that Christie was actually discussing it with him while they were supposed to be solemnly at the September 11th memorial. So you could guess if they were found guilty of all this, a little bit down the road, we could be seeing a rather large jail cell for Mr. Christie.
Well, you know, and I added, I was just talking about this, David Sampson's sentencing was pushed from around now to mid-December, I believe it was. So he's also just taking some time to think about things, looking around, deciding how much he likes being at his home.
The horizontal stripes, the vertical stripes.
There's a lot of things these people got to be thinking about. And now this is the beauty of the marketplace, right? There's competition. Which one of these three? Now, you know, I would imagine if I'm a prosecutor, I already have David Wildstein. Maybe I want three to really walk into Chris Christie's office and go, Mr. Governor, or should I say Mr. soon-to-be ex-governor? Here, I want to show you a couple of of depositions and affidavits we have here. We'll see. We'll be talking about this in the future, but we have some more more immediate concerns.
Well, it's important, but this is sort of even as much as those immediate concerns, the election in a democracy with a functioning media. They might spend some time on the fact that this is somebody who apparently, if he hadn't been tricked into thinking his plane was broken down, in Trump, was going to pick Chris Christie as vice president, and certainly had him as the head of his transition team. Hopefully that will be transitioning to prison. This is somebody high up in the, and that's on the heels of our knowing now that Rudy Giuliani has been organizing FBI, working with FBI guys to leak stuff who he's been tied into for years in the New York office. You can't get too far away from the law breaking of the likes of those who surround Mr. Trump.
It is pretty amazing what's going on now. And we haven't talked about this story. Wayne Barrett reported this yesterday in the Daily Beast. And Spencer Ackerman had a piece in The Guardian where somebody said that the FBI is Trump land, particularly out of New York.
Particularly this New York office where they just stocked, with Giuliani people. This guy, the former head of the New York office there, who's like this rabid anti-Hillary Clinton, pro-Trump partisan, Jim Kallstrom, who's gone on Fox and said all sorts of vile things about her. He was a Giuliani guy originally. Giuliani got him set up with guess who? Louis Free. Let's stop for a second to really make a rule here that if you're a Democrat and you become president, really picking somebody from the New York law enforcement community as the head of your FBI who's a Republican, bad idea. You may want to avoid that in the future. With the likes of Comey and Louis Free.
Give people a little bit of a backdrop on Louis Free.
Well, so that was who Bill Clinton appointed as his director of the FBI. And eventually he joined in and was more than happy to work with Ken Starr and the forces that were trying to impeach Bill Clinton and corroborate all these ridiculous scandals and theories out there about Secret Service agents procuring women for Clinton and all sorts of other crap the right threw out there. And, this is somebody that Clinton chose Democrats, we have to be bipartisan, chose to be his FBI director. And we have the same situation here, with Barack Obama choosing Comey.
Yep.
Now, some of that has to do with the fact that Democrats, the biggest issue we have, and first things first, Democrats, every single one of us needs to turn out for this election to stop this current threat. But if we would stop the whole not showing up to vote thing in the off years, then there wouldn't be Republicans controlling the Senate and the House so that often our presidential or our presidents have to pick people who they like to get somebody put in that position. But it doesn't change the fact that no Republican should ever be nominated again by a Democrat to run the FBI. I think we've tried this now twice in the modern age. Both times, this is what we've gotten, frankly, a shit sandwich out of it. I would say, maybe not such a good idea. But back to this whole gang. So Kallstrom, this guy, he also started a big charity around his service as a Marine. Guess who was the biggest donor?
You tell me.
Why, it was Donald Trump.
What?
One of the few places he actually gave money to and didn't renege on. So, I mean, the connections between all these guys, the current ones in that office right now, the former heads of the office, they literally are like a pipeline of Giuliani people who are all in the U.S. Attorney's Office or FBI or both, and depending upon where they're currently sitting. And Wayne Barrett, again, who's been a longtime great reporter, who's exposed a lot on both Giuliani and Trump. And you start getting into this whole world and realizing how this stuff happens when you see this. So you've got Christie, you've got Giuliani, Hillary sent her an email about what her favorite color was today. So we might want to subpoena that and look at it.
And we've seen just sort of this cavalcade of leaks out of the FBI, both sort of seeming going both directions. But the primary ones have been ones that supposedly, you know, Brett Baer had to walk back his report that the FBI says they're going to indict Hillary Clinton, not the least of which because the FBI doesn't do the indicting. It would be the Department of Justice that does the indicting. That's just a small little detail. This supposed report that they're looking into the Clinton Foundation initiative, or the Global Clinton Foundation, is a function of a book written by this guy, Schweitzer, who received funding in his think tank to write the book from Bannon, who is Donald Trump's campaign manager. I mean,
it's a joke. I mean, Hillary Clinton was lying, folks. There clearly is no vast right-wing conspiracy. When you look at somebody like Giuliani, who has always had a Trumpian temperament, but there was a point in time at least tried to play himself off as bipartisan and had some more moderate positions when he was mayor, and you wonder how he got from where he was 20 years ago to where he is now. And I always believe he had these inclinations. I mean, he was racist. He was an authoritarian mayor. But let's just say for a second he at least clamped down on some of those back then. But the money train that's out there in front of you, if you're willing to just join all these right wing nuts and start your completely incestuous consulting firms and other things, and that all ties into Roger Ailes, who was a New York guy too. I mean, not originally, but longtime New York guy who hung out with this whole crowd. So any of them and all of them can, the pipeline leads straight to Fox contributorships and appearances. I mean, you know, that's the thing about all this is, like, we sit there and we listen to them making these connections from the Clinton Foundation when all they can prove is that somebody sat in a room who gave money to the Clinton Foundation. And this has nothing to do with whether you think Hillary should have fully separated herself from the Clinton Foundation, because I believe that would have been the best procedure and by far to not have the appearance of impropriety. But they've never been able to find one actual case. Meanwhile, these guys, like, they don't even hide it in the long weeds. It's right out there for you to see. The vast connections between all of them. Rudy Giuliani, or was it Giuliani serving in one of Ailes' weddings or Ailes at Giuliani's? I mean, these guys overlap in every way humanly possible. They're all friends, and between them, they've got their clutches into law enforcement, into the, you know, into media, into politics. You want dangerous? This is all dangerous.
All right, so let's pull out just a little bit in terms of just getting a broader view of what's been going on, because obviously we're 4 days out from the election. I guess it remains to be seen. You know, one of the things that we heard in the primaries, and I certainly don't want to relitigate this, one of the things we heard in the primaries is, like, Hillary Clinton is used to taking these attacks, and she can deal with them. And I think we'll have a better sense of whether or not that's the case, you know, Tuesday evening, hopefully not too late. But certainly this stuff is dominating, it seems, like, the news media. Now, I don't know if that means anything, to be honest with you. I mean, I think the only impact is that it might help Trump's numbers slightly, because his supporters are not demoralized in the way they might have been, you know, a week or two ago.
I would say I don't think it's changing almost any minds at this point. And you could see where for a day or two after the reporting, where, because this always happens with polling, the polling changed and moved in a Trump direction. Now even the polls that saw that, like ABC News tracking poll, you know, is heading back in the opposite direction. which is what tends to happen with these things, right? It's a short-term blip and whatever. You're right. It's, you know, it's still being covered. I guess that they're still leaking some stuff, but it's been sort of a lot of it's been the messages have been muddied because, as you pointed out, other members of the FBI, I guess non-New York office members who don't feel the same way, have been leaking things about Trump, which, again, I think is terrible, too.
Right.
This is
right.
Not the way democracy is supposed to be run.
Right.
Everybody in that damn office, and all of them, should be keeping their mouths shut.
Yep.
But, you know, I'm not going to complain, I guess, for the moment, if people in New York are going to do it, and this is the only way to stop them from basically leading to a coup as close as possible. And I guess that's what we have to deal with right now. But, man, that whole place needs that. They need to clean house.
Without a doubt. I think without a doubt.
But, to win.
But yeah, what's happening in the FBI is actually, you know, sort of, I don't want to say it's standard operating practice. I think they, at least there was a sense in the FBI they had gotten away from this type of stuff. Obviously, not as much as people had suggested. But it is what we're seeing just sort of across the board. I mean, look, let me just sort of lay this out here because, you know, when I have to say, like, in the past, you know, sometimes I'll go onto Hayes's program or I'll see in other news programs, like, is democracy under attack? Is our democracy being threatened? And I think that's still a little bit of hyperbole on some level, although I think on another level, like, you can look at it and say, like, well, we've had some fundamental structural problems that have to do with, you know, sort of corruption of our politics in terms of money and whatnot. But when you see stuff like three senators saying that we are not going to confirm any Supreme Court justice, right? It's like,
yes.
And one of them is Burr in North Carolina. He's in a panic, I think, you know, hoping because it
poll just came out showing him down 4. Now, I don't know how accurate that is, although it seems that the polling has moved against him.
Yep.
And if I had to guess right now, I would say he's going to lose. So I do think he's in a panic. But
it's also tough because North Carolina, there is, I mean, this is part of the list here, but hold on. So you've got McCain also saying this, joined by the guy he called a wacko bird, Ted Cruz.
Yeah, that's a little ironic.
Yes. And then you have Ron Johnson in Wisconsin already calling for the impeachment of a president who has yet to be elected. Then
that race has gotten closer, although I think Russell, hold on, God, I hope so.
Me too.
I mean,
but
he's Johnson's a joke.
But in Wisconsin and in North Carolina, we both have, and we have significant voter suppression that's going on. The Department of Justice had to get involved in North Carolina. It's not going to, I don't think they're going to be able to stop it. They've been, North Carolina has been involved in caging, which is an explicitly outlawed form of getting people kicked off the voter rolls.
Make you wonder because there's a huge turnout in North Carolina. The question is, have they stopped enough votes? Have they cheated enough so they could win it, which is really the only honest way to put it.
Indeed. And and in Wisconsin, we're going to see that it could have the same issue in places like Milwaukee. And so you have that. You have the run-of-the-mill, oh, the Republicans are going to hold the country hostage again at one point or another with the budget, if they control the Senate. I mean, do people think that they're going to approve any executive branch people? I mean,
if the Republicans hold the Senate?
Yeah.
I mean, none except for, you know, people like Comey and Free.
I mean, never mind judges.
Even if it just ends up being 50-50, the Democrats absolutely have to take back the Senate.
Absolutely.
I mean, we don't have there's no choice in that now. I think if, you know, there have been a few people who have shown some sanity. And I'll say this, I know a little bit about John McCain. This is him. He's shown a history of he will do and sell out during the period of time he needs to. Remember, remember his stupid ad 6 years ago? Where he put up that dang fence and we all made fun of him for it. But then he signed on for immigration reform.
Right.
He'll come back to being a little more moderate when the election's over, is my guess. He just has to, you know, he'll do what it takes at the moment. I don't think he will. And so you hope he comes back. You know, people like Dean Heller and Jeff Flake, who's probably been one of the most sane Republicans this entire season, are both up for re-election in 18 in states that are trending against them, in Nevada and Arizona. You know, Susan Collins is a question mark. There's a few others like that. So the question is, you know, if the Democrats, even if they get to somewhere between 50 and 52, which I think is about the range that I would expect, are they going to have to eliminate the filibuster?
Because I think without a doubt.
I just named about a half dozen people who I could see joining them, but at least in not filibustering. But I still don't see, even at 52, I'd have to think real hard to get to 8 people.
Right.
I can get to 4 or 5 who might be sane enough, you know, to join them. But I don't know how we get to 8. So, yeah, they'll probably still have to get rid of the filibuster, which is crazy.
Well, and that again assumes that the Democrats will win the Senate. And if they don't, I mean, it's not inconceivable to me that Hillary Clinton will never, ever fill all the vacancies in the executive agencies in her tenure, at least in the first 4 years. I mean, with Obama, it took they had stalled everything for years. And I mean, it wasn't until after
the judges, they're going to start. I mean, yep. I don't know what, you know, I think at that point we've got an actual constitutional crisis, and I'm not really sure what the response to that is, but it can't be to just accept it.
And wait a second.
Right? It can't. And let's be clear here. I'm not talking about taking up arms. I'm not a nut,
right.
But I'm saying, I don't know if it takes mass protests in the streets and getting people willing to do that to shut down the country. I'm not really sure what it's going to take. But you can't, you know, we've then reached the point they can filibuster stuff and slow it down or get rid of bills. There's certain things that they can be allowed to do. They can't be allowed to literally change our democracy the way literally ignore the Constitution and the way our democracy functions. I mean, at that point, everything about our country, we're at basically at the point of the Civil War, where everybody bought into a democratic republic and agreed that we all give up certain personal rights. Because certain freedoms and security come with this whole compact that we have, and we figured out the ballot box, not with weapons. But, I mean, at some point, if they're not willing to let a democratic society function in the manner in which it was meant, again, I'm not arguing in favor of violence, but I don't know what the answer is. Maybe a few of those states want to secede, and maybe we want to let them go.
I mean, look,
I really don't know.
Brian Butler,
but you can't continue like that.
Brian Butler had a piece talking about, you know, why wouldn't people contemplate the idea that even if the Democrats take the Senate, even if Hillary Clinton is able to seat a Supreme Court nominee and the court goes 5-4, like, why is it presumed that Republican-controlled states are even going to pay attention to what the Supreme Court says on some of these things?
Or state courts.
I mean,
that's the point, is when these norms start breaking down, there's no enforcement mechanism from the courts. This is a voluntary compact that we have to all be in and say that we will allow, we're adding our consent to be governed. If that gets to a point where even I don't know if you want to call them elites, call them whatever you want, because most of them are imbeciles, but elected Republicans will no longer respect that. We don't have a country anymore. I'm not really sure what to say about that.
I mean, it's...
My solution would be, everybody who voted one way, why don't we form our own country? You guys get the rest. Seriously, if you think I'm being ridiculous, I'm kind of not being ridiculous. I don't know what to do at that point, but if there is a point where a group of people can no longer agree to being to the outcomes of elections and decisions rendered by courts, you can't have a country anymore. I mean, if New York and Alabama, just to choose two places, are so far apart that Alabama cannot consent to being ruled by what New York voted for, if Alabama loses to the ballot box, Alabama then needs to leave and form its own country, because I'm not sure what else you do. I'm really not. But you can't to me, when you keep giving in, when you keep bowing down, you never get anywhere. Again, read the period from the 1840s to the 1860s. How many compromises were made? How much ass-kissing was done to those who just would not – there could be no slowing down of slavery whatsoever. Anything that you did, even in the end electing Abraham Lincoln, who did not want to go to war, wanted to solve it peacefully was enough for them to go to war. So you do have to ask yourself a question. At what point, if people are no longer willing to be governed, do you choose to still govern them? I don't know.
Yeah.
For smarter legal minds than me.
But. I mean, at the very least, what we're looking at is a crisis that is without precedent, at least in our lifetime. You know, I mean, maybe you got to go back 60, 70 years. Although, I mean, maybe, you know, I mean, to a certain extent, the civil rights era, when you're talking about integration, we had similar, but it was more isolated.
There were a lot of federal laws that were, you know, just sort of ignored. But I think the difference is that, and I'm not justifying this in any way, the difference is if you want to look during even the Jim Crow era, the sad truth was the majority of whites in those states at that point in time, and by majority I mean probably close to 80 or 90%, were in favor of what was going on. So it was sort of you versus them, and you're going to have to fight it out, right? Whereas now I'm talking about some small sheriff, you know, in a part of Indiana could refuse to do something. You know what I mean? It's not the same thing as it was then. It's spread all over the country. It's not as sort of concentrated. It's become, instead of, I mean, it used to be, people forget that West Virginia was an ardent, you know, union state, which is why it broke with Virginia over slavery, right? Well, now West Virginia has gone and joined the other side, quite frankly, in their views. So I don't really, you know, it's not about the union anymore. It's now much more rural people in places like Wisconsin or places like Ohio here probably think more like rural people in Alabama do than I probably have more in common with somebody in a city there. So I don't really know what the full solution is. It's not as easy to kind of, you know, but in the end, it's going to be different because, as you were saying back then, certain laws were just sort of ignored and nobody enforced them. And that's just kind of the way it was. Whereas, you know, I'm not going to allow people in the state I live in who are rural, who are not, if they end up winning this for Trump, there will be a very slight majority in this state. I'm not letting them take my rights away.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer.
Yeah. That's the thing is that I think we're headed into, sort of just uncharted territory in many respects. And, you know, and I think part of how quickly this is dealt with is going to be a function of, you know, frankly, like the Democratic establishment sort of recognizing like, oh, wow, this is just we've got to
two things. I mean, it's the Republican establishment first. What will they do?
We already know what they're going to do. We already know that. That to me is that's an answered question. Yeah, I mean, there is no reason to believe that they're going to behave any differently. There's just no reason to believe that because you still have two guys in the Senate at least, who are going to run for president, right? And one of them is going to run on the obstruction ticket, and the other one's going to get pulled
into. Maybe only one of them.
Well, Rubio can try it, but I don't see why.
Well, he may not win.
No.
I know he's looking ahead, but we don't know the results yet. I'm hoping those polls, at least some of those polls, show it close.
Right. He may not win, I guess, in Florida, but at the very least, Ted Cruz is going to be there. And
that's right.
And there's bound to be other senators who are getting ideas about running. And
what's really interesting, though, is, you know, maybe with all this behavior, I think this is another really interesting thing we have to see play out, is that the Republicans seem to have lost a lot. And, you know, I'm not saying anything, you know, big here about the election, but let's see, post-election, a lot of the kind of support from Mormons out west. And where does that make a difference? Interestingly, even after Ted Cruz said what he said, and Mike Lee is supposed to be buddies with him, Mike Lee didn't agree. He actually came out and said that they wouldn't do that. So are there enough people like that to break with?
I don't think so.
You know, that's what I'm saying. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying there won't be crises. There will. I'm not saying we aren't now still have, as I think Norm Ornstein put it in his book, an outlier, a party that is so far out of the extreme it doesn't accept science and doesn't accept, you know, basically accepted facts and the rest. That force is still going to be there. I don't think I'm saying, but you know, will enough people be willing, will they find, again, a half dozen to eight of them or however many are needed to switch over, or at least, and be willing to say, on basic functions, not on legislation, where I think we'll be screwed, with the exception of maybe right. immigration. But on basic functions like the Supreme Court and you know, executive branch appointees to cabinet positions, would they be willing to allow that to happen?
Can
they
find,
depending upon if the Democrats take the Senate, 8 to 10, or you know, whatever, 7 if the Democrats have the most amazing night, that are willing to do this? That's the question.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, I don't think that it is a safe bet. To bet that Republicans will be reasonable. I'm sorry.
Oh, like, no.
I mean,
no,
look,
I'm
just imagine.
Just
I mean, you
got to
imagine. Look, post-election, there's going to be, if it's not Trump TV, it's going to be called something else. And we don't know where Fox will be necessarily, but I can assure you where all of talk radio is going to be. And there is absolutely 0% reason to believe there is any moderating forces in the Republican Party. And frankly, you know, I think the Clinton campaign thought they were doing themselves and the Senate Democrats a favor by not tying the Republicans to Donald Trump. But the fact is that this is going to allow the Republicans to say, like, okay, that was Donald Trump. And they're
but
just going to do the same thing that Trump would have done, but for with just a little bit more media savvy and without the complete lack of like, you know, of impulse control, essentially.
I agree, but I think that's gotten a lot better the last month. I think you've seen people at the top of the ticket, as well as top level, like the A-list, I'd call them, of surrogates, like Barack, you know, like President Obama, like Michelle Obama and others making that connection. You've certainly seen in Senate races, the ads making that connection in House races. You've seen, you know, progressive intellectuals certainly writing pieces, pointing out that this is not a black swan event, that, you know, that this they got there. I mean, Paul Krugman just wrote one that was out today, but many others.
Paul Krugman? This,
we
I mean,
got
it's,
here.
It's, I'm sorry. Maybe. I mean, all I know is that you got Chuck Schumer going around saying, like, you know, we got Clinton, we got Ryan on this repatriation deal. I mean, they're in fantasy land.
I'm not telling you that there won't be some bad crap that we'll get through. I'm talking right now about the basic functions of government and whether that will be able to go forward. When it comes to actual legislation, no, I mean, you
right,
know, the
right.
As I said,
well, no, of course, but legislation,
an immigration
fine.
Bill, perhaps, because you still have most of those people there, 67 of whom voted for this thing, you know, in a Republican-controlled Congress, right? Was it, or was it Democratic at the time?
I will say this:
if
they do not nuke the filibuster, I would bet everything on no hearings, or at the very least, just no ability to get a Supreme Court nominee on the court. I mean,
yeah, I would say this. There has to be a Democratic majority. I agree with you. If the Republicans have a majority, even if it's a one-seat majority, then it doesn't matter anymore because Mitch McConnell controls what happens. And at that point, he's never shown himself willing to stand up to anything. So throw aside Trump for a second, because obviously if he wins, I don't want to get into
what
all the problems
month,
we have in the country then.
What month do you think they will start the impeachment hearings in 2017?
My guess is the House by about April or May will
right.
start.
Right. I would think so too. Right. They're going to take the summer to just sort of like get all the stuff together. They're going to start they'll do a select committee on impeachment or some type of, you know, BS like
that.
No doubt.
Even if it ends up not going anywhere, and I'm not saying it won't, but I have no doubt that of those, I mean, you've got those 30-something members of the House Study Committee that are literally basically saying by being in the House Study Committee that we're all crazy people. They're going to, I mean, every one of them is going to yell for impeachment. And my guess is you've got another 150 or so, you know, House Republicans, some of whom will agree with it and some of whom will be too wimpy to do anything about it. And then I guess, as we were saying, if the Democrats pick up 20 seats or so, which I hope they do, or more, it's going to come down to kind of like what we're saying in the Senate. It's going to come down to the Charlie Dents of the world. Are you willing to go with this group of lunatics over a cliff, or are you going to put the brakes on it and say this is ridiculous? And I guess, the past gives me no faith in them. So don't get me wrong. I'm just sort of arguing all the possibilities here. I have no faith in any of these guys anymore. I have no faith in the FBI. I have no faith in our media covering anything with any proportion, any intelligence. I mean, I thought I could not have more disrespect for our media after the last couple of election cycles. But this one, this is the one where, I have to convince myself I still believe in a free press and the First Amendment on that part, because I don't think they do us any good. I mean, you could eliminate CNN tomorrow and people would actually get smarter.
Well, it's not just that.
They spend less time looking for missing planes, I'll tell you that.
Let's be honest here. You know, in terms of this whole email server thing, which has received more attention than all policy discussion combined by a multiple, I think like a factor of five or something.
Yeah, let's give people numbers here so they know, because I looked at two studies yesterday for a radio hit that I did. There was a grand total on policy of 32 minutes on network TV since the beginning of 2016. So 32 minutes of policy, that's the equivalent of basically of just about one network TV broadcast of the entire year was devoted to that. As bad as it was in 2008, there were 220 minutes devoted to it then. This time, 32. I could name among those things not mentioned: climate change, Medicaid, guns. I mean, you can go on and on. Policies that were just never mentioned on the network news. And in the comparison of Hillary to Trump, his taxes, which he refused to release, have averaged each quarter of this year getting about 10% of the coverage. Between 8% and 10% of the coverage of Trump has been about his taxes. Meanwhile, not even including all the other scandals around Trump. Meanwhile, 32% or a third of the coverage about Hillary Clinton has been about her emails. Just think about that. And if you can't come to the conclusion after the two things I just told you, the media doesn't need, I mean, like in their current form, except for a couple of heroes like Farthenthold over at The Post and I think Brian Stelter has done a decent job, one of the few on CNN. And, you know, I mean, most of the rest of them are absolutely useless. They could not exist, and people would be just as informed.
But let's be honest, too. I mean, you know, we can make this about the corporate media, but there's been a lot of media on the left. I mean, obviously, we expect this stuff out of Newsmax and that crap. But there's been a lot of media on the left, too, that has just gone with the stupidity of these email servers are the dumbest things in the world. Like, you know, there is and
that piece that Matt Iglesias wrote, that this whole thing was bullshit, is one of the pieces I would recommend.
Iglesias has a piece about it, but also there's a guy, Ramachandran, who has literally got like four or five tweet storms that sort of like walk people through this stuff.
David Dayan, who you have on this show, I think, occasionally wrote a good piece at TNR. I mean, there's a lot of them out there, and they've all gone. And it's good to see those pieces, because they usually have studies accompanying them, and then people like me and I believe you can be like, okay, I'm not crazy.
Well,
we just spend this much time again and again and again rehashing something that Colin Powell also did. That was a mistaken judgment that didn't risk national security, that eventually, she was too secretive about, but cop to, it really isn't even a big deal, quite frankly. Is it stupid? Yes. Should she have done it? No. But a bunch of these people, for the convenience of not having to carry around two devices to look into their personal email and their work email, made these types of decisions. Again, among
them, Colin Powell. But it was stupid. I mean, look,
insane.
This is not to say
I'm not arguing
that I don't have issues.
Stupid.
Right. But it was stupid only from a political standpoint. I mean, I don't think there was any stupidity involved in it from just sort of an operation standpoint.
No,
or from
a
security standpoint. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, everybody knows that State Department stuff is Swiss cheese anyways. There's overclassification. I mean, there are definitely issues that I have with Hillary Clinton, but they tend to be more about policy. And to the extent that it's like there's even I don't even think it's really the word corruption as much as it is sort of some type of pathological desire to accumulate money.
Look, I'm going to come out here and say this very quite clearly, because I don't know why people don't. She's not corrupt, which someone as simply as Bill Weld came out and said, who's supposed to be running against her and is a former Republican and will probably be one again. Okay. Judgment issues on some things and not even on everything. Yes. And I don't know if it's the background she came from. I don't know what it is. There's no doubt. And I've been very critical of this on this show and many places before, that it is obscene. And George W. Bush, of course, did it too. So this is not a Clinton thing. It's not a weakness just of theirs. But what people, it is the culture now. I mean, 50 years ago, the lobbying industry barely existed. It is a culture now that you come out of government service and you cash in on that government service as much as possible. And there are a few people like Russ Feingold who have been notable in that they haven't done it and deserve incredible sort of respect for that. But I would be critical of the Clintons for doing it, but it is not illegal. It is unseemly is what it is. It is not corrupt. All right. It is wrong.
It's corrosive. I think it's corrosive.
I'm not saying that there isn't legitimate criticism of it. But what I'm saying is to even try and put that, forget just Donald Trump, who's a complete, I can't even go into, put it this way. He has every bad human trait you can possibly have is all in one person with Donald Trump. On the Republican side, take a Rubio, right, who used the Republican Party credit card, to pay off his foreclosures and did all sorts of things that were corrupt and shady. Ted Cruz.
Well, you do okay, that for the miles.
Of course. He wanted to get the free flights, who can't literally say a couple honest phrases in a row. I mean, you know, up against what's on the right, Hillary Clinton is so honest, it's almost ridiculous. So she made some errors in judgment. She did some things that are in with our culture now. Why they needed to amass 50 or 100 million and couldn't be happy with a couple million, you know, I find it unseemly too. Very unseemly.
And look, and they, I feel like they surround themselves personnel-wise with some very equally unseemly people.
Yes.
And frankly, not I don't think particularly good from a policy standpoint. I have problems with her, you know, as a war hawk, and she's more militaristic than I want. And she would not have been my choice as the nominee. But the bottom line is, it's a different question.
What we're supposed to be voting
exactly.
About.
and frankly, I think so much on the left, so much time was spent on the left with BS. That those issues, that it has undermined the to organize, to push her to the left in certain areas, because so much of that time was spent on BS by people chasing clicks and dollars on YouTube or on their website. I mean, and realize that it raised their profile.
You want to start calling out those people on the left? You can do it, Sam.
Well,
I'm okay with that. Because sadly, some of them are people that we've at times called friends, and maybe still do.
I mean, all these situations are revealing about a lot of things. But all right, Cliffy. All right, we got to go in a second.
Yep.
We're going to talk to you on Tuesday, right? I mean, we haven't arranged this,
but
Tuesday when we do our rolling coverage.
Look, you're either going to be celebrating or you guys are going to have to talk me down from a high
building.
Well,
I'm saying
so we better talk.
Tuesday during, but before we get there, prediction. What is your, you got a prediction for us? Like, what are you anticipating? Where should we be looking in terms of the Senate, in terms of Clinton's, whether Clinton or Trump is going to win?
So what's interesting is that John Ralston has pretty much said that already with the early voting that Nevada is almost put away, which, again, shouldn't be a message to people that you don't go out and vote. Everybody vote constantly. So I think one of the big Senate seats I'd look at is that one in Nevada, because I think that was one that we were expected for a while to lose. You hold that one, I think right away Democrats are in a great position to take back the Senate. It's not definite. I guess we're doing the Senate right now. You need to, I expect Russ Feingold to hold on, but
right.
I wish,
Wisconsin.
And I'd look at Indiana too, in terms of what, you know, whatever you think of Evan Bayh, that one's gotten close. I'm going to pick Evan Bayh by 2 or 3 points that he hangs on. I have some inside scoop there, but
okay.
I could be wrong. I'm just, I
all
know,
right.
I,
so Nevada, Indiana, Wisconsin, we need, two more.
Illinois is a done deal.
Yep.
And I think at this point, Pennsylvania,
yep.
New Hampshire, and North Carolina, we take two of those three.
Okay, so you're saying 52 seats.
That's what I'm going with, yes.
Yeah, I
think we lose Florida, sadly, close. But I'm talking about the Senate race. I don't think we're going to pull that off. I'm hoping I'm wrong. Obviously, Ohio's a done deal long ago. I want to say we're going to win in Missouri. And again, everybody go out and vote, damn it, because we could pull an upset there. But the trend of the state, you know, Candor doesn't have the name that Bayh has and doesn't have the money. Will it revert to form? I'm worried it will.
Okay.
And so I'm hoping I'm wrong.
Electoral votes.
I think on that one, at this point, I'm ready to say, I think everything I've been reading about the Latino surge is real. And it's huge, and I don't think we can account for it. So I think Hillary Clinton is going to lose Texas by 3 points or so. I think it's going to be incredibly close. I think she's going to win Arizona. That's my surprise prediction for you.
Oh.
And I think she's going to win Arizona. I think she's going to lose Iowa, sadly, which has been a Democratic state trending away from us. And I don't know, I may be too emotionally involved in Ohio to have a prediction on it. But my heart tells me that somehow we're going to find a way here.
So you're saying lose Iowa and Indiana and maybe Ohio. There's a couple.
But we hold the northern Midwest that they've tried to steal from us. New Mexico is not even a shot for them. We hold Michigan. We hold Pennsylvania. We hold Wisconsin. And I think from early voting and everything I've seen, not to mention demographics, even with what they're doing with caging voters and the rest, I think we're going to take North Carolina and take Florida.
Okay.
So my estimate to you that we're going to win is between 320 and 340.
I was going to say.
Electoral
vote. Yep, that's where
it all comes down to whether we win Ohio or not. I'm going to go with, damn it, our turnout machine here is amazing. We pull out an upset and win Ohio by a half a point. There you go. I'm going with it.
And so that puts you, Ohio's got how many?
18 electoral votes.
Okay.
I'm pretty close to 340.
That puts you. I think it's like 343 or something like that. It depends on like what you're doing with Nebraska's one or two. But okay, so I'm with you.
I think we're going to lose the main second district, as much as I don't like saying that, because it's all rural, all white, and Nebraska one, I'm not sure. We could pick it up, and that could offset it. But yeah, let's go with the low 340s.
Yeah, I'm not as hopeful about Ohio, which puts me around closer to like 323 or 4, I think, around there. But I think in terms of percentage-wise, I think she gets to just right up against and maybe even surpasses Obama's 2008 numbers, because I think in California it's going to be an unprecedented rout. Of Donald Trump.
I think New York too, don't
you?
I mean, I think so. I think though she's going to run up the numbers, and Texas is going to be a lot closer, which obviously is a big state.
I'm with you I'm with you on the Senate. I think I think New Hampshire, North Carolina, I think Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Illinois. I'm changing my mind on Indiana now because of what you're saying. But all right, well, Cliffy, we'll talk on Tuesday. All right.
I mean, I'm telling you from polling I've seen, it's still a long 4 days. So I'm hoping that polling holds. we'll talk on Tuesday. Let's hope that we've all made America safe for democracy again.
We've made it great again.
Yeah, bye, great. Cliff.
Great, made it great
yeah,
again.
That's great. That's great.
It's been great.
Good.
Yeah. By the way,
yeah.
There's some open positions for shepherds in New Zealand. I've checked. So
there's a lot of sevens
so well,
there.
Noted.
Sell all property. Immediately get the best price you can. We're going on a trip.
All right, take it easy, Cliff. Oop. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to the good liars. We'll have a chance to do our predictions later. I just wanted to get Cliff. All right, quick break. We'll be back with no. No, we're going to do, this is going to be a full-on freebie for these guys. Yeah, long show. We'll be right back with the Good Liars. All right, folks, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Now, longtime listeners of this program, not even longtime listeners, the people who have been listening for what seems like a long time, which has been the past year primary, will note that we kept playing the clips of, I mean, the first time, I think, I can't remember what it was, if we got fooled the first time. But then we started seeing these guys show up at different campaign events through the election. In fact, let's play the first one that we have. This one, I'm quite convinced that that Jeb Bush was just shattered by this. And this is Jeb Bush at an event, and I believe, I don't, where was it? Was this in New Hampshire? It was in Iowa? Was it in Iowa? Jesus. I think this really hurt me, but he was wearing a sweater. He's, you know, he's being very Jeb Bush. And so he's talking to an audience. All the seats are filled. And then this happens to poor Jeb Bush.
Consider themselves undecided. I hope that I can persuade you to go tonight to caucus for me.
We've been here for over 2 hours. We haven't gotten paid for our time.
We got the $50.
You're done. Yeah. Such, get out of here, man.
No.
So, two guys stand up. You guys got to wear your headphones or something.
I got an echo.
Yeah, because we were getting a bit of an echo. They were really proficient with their camera work on the thing. But as they try and get those headphones, hold on, give me 1 second. They turn out to be two guys named who are a comedy duo named the Good Liars, Jason Selvig and Davram Stifler. Did I do your name right?
Davram Stifler, but close enough. Definitely close enough.
Davram Stifler. That's not too bad. Guys, welcome. And congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You guys were on to us from the very beginning.
Well,
we have to admit, we weren't talking to press. We made a rule not to talk to press, but you guys figured us out pretty fast.
Well, we actually called your mom. Whose mom was it that we called?
Yep. That would have been my mom. Yep. Wonderful lady.
She was very, I remember I spoke to her on the phone. She's like, I don't know what he's doing exactly, but I'll push it along.
I'm not sure she still knows exactly what we were doing, but she's very supportive. And
she did sound very supportive.
All right. So all this culminated in a movie called Undecided, which I watched last night on Netflix. It's also available on iTunes. I enjoyed it immensely, and it's a mock documentary, which is a format that I have a special affinity for. And all right, let's start with this. Either one of you can answer this. Let's start with you, Jason. So, sure. In the film, the first time you guys start to do this, and I should also say that Jenna Friedman's in it. She's a former producer on the Daily Show, and also, I guess, a self-appointed Sarzina of Ebola. People can go check her Twitter feed to figure out what that means. And an old friend, Asif Manvi, is also in the film. So the first thing you guys do is you go after Rick Santorum. Is that right? Did you guys shoot this in more or less the sequence that we saw?
Besides the Trump, the Trump is boring, which is like one of the last stunts we do. That was actually the first one we did. And when we got the idea to do the movie was after doing that stunt and seeing how people reacted to it. Yeah.
So you guys didn't set out to do a movie. You were just doing this as stunts.
Yeah,
we shot a couple stunts first, but you know that was a very small percentage of the movie. And then, as with some of our comedy in the past, realized that it definitely had some legs, and this election was shaping up to be pretty wild. So we started to rethink things, and thought we could be more ambitious about it.
Yeah, to answer your question about Rick Santorum. That was the actual first day of shooting of the movie. We got to Iowa, and we thought maybe if we're lucky, we'll get to shake Rick Santorum's hand and say a funny line about him being my dad or something like that. And I just shook his hand and introduced myself. And from that point forward, he thought I was in charge of this whole thing. He thought I was the one who was like leading the whole gun place.
Wait a second. Let me just tell this because people don't realize this. They were at a gun range. And somehow, like, I'm watching this and I'm going, like, how did this happen that both these guys are basically have their arms around Rick Santorum and are firing a weapon.
Yeah, yeah. It was crazy. And like I say in the movie, I've never fired a gun before in my life. That's actually true. I'd never fired a gun before. And Rick Santorum is loading one, and then I'm shooting one next to him while calling him dad. And I'm just thinking, if I drop this gun or if it backfires and I end up killing a presidential candidate, this would be really bad. This would be really bad. Do not kill Rick Santorum. Please don't. Please don't.
But DeVrom, I got the sense, like, I mean, when I saw this, I thought, oh, this must have been early on because I imagine that if this had happened later in the shoot, that because at one point, DeVrom, it looked like you were just playing with the idea of like, should I just fire this round off into the like not down the firing range? Like you started to.
I mean, look, like Jason said, it was the first day of shooting. We couldn't believe the access we were getting. So, you know, you're seeing it like a 2 or 3 minute scene or whatever. That was 45 minutes of just being, you know, talking to the press there. A lot of them thought we were both his kids. There were some quotes in local papers that were like, Rick Santorum's sons say they've never fired guns before. And it just turned into this the weirdest thing. And it was the first thing we shot. I mean, we were there at like 6 a.m., you know, in the morning of the first day of shooting. And so it was really surreal. So, yeah, some of those moments you saw, there were many, many more. And it was a good omen for the rest of the film if we could get access like that.
I have to say, were there times where you were in situations like that where you were, like, nervous? I mean, that struck me as one of those things, like, you guys weren't quite sure what was going on, but you had to commit to these things. Were there times where you started to get nervous? Because frankly, like I think it takes what you guys did took a tremendous amount of balls, frankly.
Well, thank you. And yes, there were nerves, but it's the adrenaline kind of kicks in when you're about to do something crazy. And that's what got us through it. But yeah, there were some times where we were like at the Jeb Bush rally, we were let out by the campaign manager. She was cursing at us the whole time.
Told us it was going to affect our future.
Yeah. Actually,
that's true.
She's right.
That's true.
She's maybe not wrong about that.
I just tweeted at her, actually, asking if she'd seen the movie.
And how great Jeb Bush was in it.
Well, you know what? That's funny, because we were talking today. I was like, you know, I can imagine that maybe, like, George P.'s son, if he is a kid, it's like, you know, would come across this on YouTube and then just report it back up. And then just like that call where George P. calls his dad, Jeb, and says, you're not going to believe this. It was just a prank, dad.
Well, we can dream.
He's going right? to be like, oh, gosh. Oh, darn it. Darn it.
They darn it all over again.
That's come on, bad. Man. Come on, guys.
The part about that scene that you can't see unless you watch the movie is Jason, before they get up to talk about that they've been paid to sit there, Jason leans over to a woman sitting next to him and goes, is that the guy in charge talking about Jeb Bush? She's like, what?
And the implication is because we had created this whole fake events coordinator called Dale Herbert Events. So our whole thing was where we were looking for Dale to find out why we weren't being paid. So the idea is that, you know, Jason was asking if that was Dale Herbert or not.
Yeah. And the thing you don't see in the movie is we go to a Rand Paul rally right before this, an event before it. And we're handing out flyers for Dale Herbert Events for seat fillers at a Jeb Bush rally. So before the rally, it was a news story. That because a Marco Rubio campaign staffer tweeted a picture of the flyer. And then Jeb Bush's campaign started blaming Marco Rubio's campaign for doing this. And all these two people are the two campaigns are going after each other.
In a matter of like 2 hours, we have these campaigns blaming one another. And then it occurs to us that we need to finish out the story and go be the seat fillers. So it was a morning Rand Paul event and an afternoon Jeb Bush event, and we were able to kind of bring it full circle.
It it is amazing to me how much you guys impacted the campaign. Like tell the Carl Cameron story, because that also was pretty awesome to watch how the media really embellishes these things.
Well, we created Trump armbands. They're kind of Nazi style armbands with red, white, and blue with a T instead of a swastika. And we were in West Palm Beach, Florida, and we saw Fox News shooting. So we decided to just put the armbands on, go back to the car, put them on. And then we just walked by them and we're like, hey, guys, you guys shooting a movie? What are you guys doing here? And
because they had their video cameras and just playing dumb. It was like, what? You guys making a little movie?
This is fun. And they asked us about the armbands. And we're like, yeah, it's Trump armbands. We're just showing our pride. And he was like, oh, you know that look, what that looks like. And we're like, yeah, it looks like a Trump armband. Yeah, it's cool. And then we just walked away. We're like, good luck with your movie. Take care. And then he follows us. He follows us and asks us for the armband and then goes on air saying that the Trump campaign is handing them out, which was crazy because we never said that. He just like blatantly lied on air.
There was something else that he fully like that he lied about too. That was like not only that the Trump campaign was handing him out, but there was some other I can't remember what it was per se, that it's supposed to signify full on fascism or something like that.
Oh,
like
yeah. Had to have some sort of fascist military
militant attire. Yeah, yeah. It was just like he specifically said we were careful not to say that the Trump campaign was handing them out. We felt okay about doing it as long as we didn't say that it was from the Trump campaign. So it was a point of ours not to say it. And then he just went on air and said they said the Trump campaign was handing them out. Yeah, so it's just kind of interesting. That was the story he wanted to report. So he reported it.
And they did a retraction, which was
so
funny. It was so funny because he was like, they said they were from the Trump campaign and they weren't. And they just have a terrible sense of humor. Terrible. And I was like, oh, that's the best compliment I've ever gotten in my life. Like, Fox News.
Yeah, we were just eating it up at that moment. I mean, just watching this guy just be so, so upset with us.
So
I'm trying to say that we were not funny.
Now, yeah. I mean, I want to talk about the stuff you did on Occupy Wall Street, because I actually was, I remember seeing you, I think, in person down there at one point. But it never, I don't think I ever put it together. Well, I don't think I put it together until I went to your site that you were there. In fact, you know what? Let's play this. This is, at one point, I guess, Rachel Maddow did a story about you guys and it included a clip from, I think what was a local news story. I don't know if it was a cable news story, or maybe it was CNN actually covering your supposed protest of the Occupy protest. Here is, I don't know who the woman was that was doing the what do they call these? The walk-bys or whatever it is. But here she's talking about it.
Interestingly, not everyone here in the park is one of the protesters that agrees with Occupy Wall Street.
You knew it had to happen. These two self-described investment bankers say they are happy to be part of the 1% that has all the wealth.
Tell us your name and why you think this is not a good idea.
My name's John, and I'm with an organization called Occupy Wall Street. We have a website, OOWS.org. And we kind of feel betrayed by the mayor. It seemed like he was on our side, and kind of pulled a fast one on us.
We worked hard to get where we are, and it seems like a lot of people are down here whining that they don't have the wealth that we have. And this is America. This is capitalism. And it kind of sounds like this protest is un-American, if you think about it.
If you think about it.
If you think about it.
Yeah, if you think about it. Just come to the same conclusion.
So I'm gonna assume that, you know, to a certain extent, that where your political affinities lie. And so,
okay.
So you have this, maybe I'm wrong, but let's just play along.
Trump 2016, yeah.
What was you also trolled the Sanders campaign and the Clinton campaign, but not necessarily in as, there wasn't as much, I think, maybe I'm projecting here, because when I've done comedic things like this in the past, a lot of it's fueled by a deep-seated hate of something. But give me your perspective on that. Like,
with the Bernie thing, like I noticed, and I don't know, at least in the film, you didn't interrupt him. You guys just basically ended up getting really, really high and taking your socks off in the in the press area. But
yeah, I mean, I think that was a little bit of a comment on his supporters. And then, but as far as Hillary, I mean, in some ways, she got it the worst. We did our shirtless for Hillary thing, and this was after being right behind her for an entire rally wearing Settle for Hillary shirts.
That's right.
And then we went shirtless. We decided, you know, why settle for her when we can be super fans? We went there shirtless. She ended up using us in a campaign ad 2 days later. And so she got a lot of backlash for that. And Rachel Maddow did this long piece that was like, how could the Clinton campaign make such a silly mistake? These guys are clearly making kind of a mean, hopefully funny joke about her. Why would she use them in a campaign ad? So I don't know. We definitely have our own ideas about politics. But as far as the way the film played out, I think she got it kind of bad.
Well, you know, it's funny because I thought that moment when she responded to you guys shortlist was one of the best moments.
Shirtless. Yeah. They didn't go to that degree.
Well, but that's the point. She actually said at one point, like, oh, I'm fine with that. It's just as long as you don't take anything else off. And
it was great. She was very human in that moment.
Yes.
I think that's why they used it. And
I agree.
So on the one hand, we felt like that's great. We gave her a chance to kind of seem, you know, like she really has a heart. But then, you know, she got some backlash for using some guys that had clearly, you know, been right at her rallies, kind of poking fun at her.
We were when we took the selfie with her, we were like, we're so happy we found a candidate to settle for. And to her face, I mean, she's like, and they still used it. I understand why they did. It was like a very human moment, but still, that's still pretty funny.
I guess maybe that's my own bias that didn't stick out. Yeah, as
yeah,
me. Like particularly
say, it just seems like
unfair.
Exactly the case. Yeah, totally.
That's, exactly.
That could describe my voting experience as well.
Hey, well, I think we said a lot of truth. I think Ted Cruz is possessed by a demon. I think that these
and his face is horrifying.
Exactly.
Marco Rubio is trying to move in on my girl, and you know, he needed to hear that. He stopped after that. So you know,
yeah, he dropped out of the race a couple days later. So yeah.
We should just explain that, you know, obviously there's a narrative that takes place outside of these pranks, and there's a narrative built around it. Oh wait, do we have the clip of Ted Cruz? Yeah, okay, you got. Was Ted Cruz, was he literally interrupted by the sound of you vomiting? Well, we'll see. Let's play this and then we'll discuss.
Very nice young man, a very confused fellow, apparently in the Bernie Sanders campaign. You know, I'm curious.
Look at yourself in the mirror!
All right, I should say these guys are holding up a mirror and a cross and then proceed to begin to violently vomit because they theoretically, right? Because you've been looking in the face of the devil. Yes. So, yeah, I guess it's quite clear from that clip that things got interrupted.
Yes, and the rally before, there was a rally in Iowa where DeRom just yells, oh, my God, he looks so weird. I feel like I'm going to get sick. And then he does go, like, fake throw up in the trash can and does interrupt him. But the one thing about Ted Cruz was he always had these little zingers afterwards where he would, like, try and, like, make a joke. And it really bothered me. I always
kind of got us. Like I think after the exorcism, he said, "I didn't know the left believed in God" or something like that. We're like, "Wow, that was pretty quick."
That was okay. Yeah, you're pretty quick-witted there. But yeah, he bothered me the most, I think, out of everybody.
Right. Anyway, we were trying to do him a favor and get the demon out of his body, but you know, I don't know that he changed much, so I think it's still in there.
Well, he finally, I mean, I guess for a while, he had disendorsed or, yeah, go ahead. Michael's got a question.
Did you guys ever try to do anything with Ben Carson?
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
We did the.
This is great.
we got him, asked him for his autograph to sign a medical marijuana prescription. But
and I'm guessing he was totally oblivious and signed it. Okay, right. I'll sign that for you. No problem.
More. There's some other stuff that didn't make the movie. I sat down and asked for like medical advice from him. And we did a whole thing. It's a deleted scene. It was like a 4 or 5 minute section that was with the Super PACs, where we went on Ben Carson's Super PACs bus and they gave us all this cool swag, Ben Carson t-shirts and everything. And then we went on his campaign bus and like said, we're going to leave the t-shirts there. And they freaked out and called the Secret Service on us because you can't have the Super PAC t-shirts on the campaign bus. It was crazy.
You can't park in the same parking lot. Right. It was
We've got a whole lot of things going on between that campaign.
Like we're like, why? It's the same candidate, right? It says it on the shirt. We'll just leave him here. We got too many shirts. And they just watching them react to that and how, you know, clearly they're there for the same purpose, but the whole thing is.
Will you put those things up on YouTube, the extras and whatnot, or do you have it like on a DVD, that type of thing?
We will have the extras up. It was supposed to be on iTunes, but the turnaround for this was crazy.
Yeah.
We had a great editor, Connor Kelly, and who worked with the director, Julio, and they like put in long, long hours to even get this out before the election. It's crazy the amount of work they put in.
So did you guys, just from a, so you went, you did the stunt with Trump, and then you realized, okay, this should be, we can make a movie into this. How did the process go from there?
We did that, just like you said, we did that stunt. There's a moment where I'm on stage with Ted Cruz, and we took a small part of that moment. We shot those two things first. So there's just a little bit of that moment in the film. But they both got such great coverage, and you know, we've been comedians doing things like this for a while, so we thought, okay, there's a bigger project in here, and we sat down, and we knew that we wanted to make a narrative feature. So at that point, it was just a matter of, let's write a story. And then once we had a outline of kind of a blueprint of how this was going to look, we started looking at the schedule of events, and we went to Iowa, California, Florida, Ohio, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, New York. It was just, okay, where can we go to get the next piece of our story?
In that trailer, did you actually take the trailer to these places?
One of the trips we did.
Yeah, we only had it for the New Hampshire trip. And then we kind of like filled in all the gaps in the story.
Shooting things out of order and trying to place that RV in as many places as possible. They were all different challenges, but you know.
And did you go, once you had that script, did you go to like Netflix and get them to finance it? Or did you guys do this yourselves and then sell it to them?
No. It was, yeah, we the three of us with Julia, we wrote the story and we did it ourselves. And then, yeah, we were lucky to have Netflix get on board afterwards.
Jason, you know, touched on the fact that Julio and our editor, Connor Kelly, had to, you know, spend a lot of long hours and get the thing edited in time. We couldn't really sell it until it was a finished product. So it got, you know, finished and sold in a matter of a few days.
Wow.
And so we were lucky to get it out before the election at all.
Oh, Kelly has a question for you.
Can I just ask, is your editor Connor Kelly, he's not a seasonal Alaskan fisherman / home tattoo artist?
Yes, that's so crazy. How did you
find him? Weird.
Kelly knows all the seasonal fisherman tattoo artist editors in town.
No, I mean, I do.
The triple threat.
She does.
She knows all of them.
Well, the home tattoo artists I know.
Actually, and it has worked in the commercial world for a while, but is like, you know, I think this is his first comedic feature, and he just like with the amount of time he had and the amount of footage he had, he like really nailed it. I mean, there are always things we getting such a rushed project out that we go back and we change, but I can't believe what a great job he did. There were over 200 hours of footage.
Wow. Yeah, and that's the other thing you should say is that what you don't see is the amount of work that our shooters had to do. Connor, we had Peter Barr and Charlotte Kaufman who like did an amazing job. They put themselves in danger to film this, and like without somebody with, you know, you're saying like, oh, this was ballsy. Like those guys were ballsy. They had to do it all. and, you know, and talk to Secret Service and do everything we had
and you know, they got every moment. I mean, some of them were harder to get than others, but the movie came together because we got the footage. So it was great to have a team that was pretty fearless.
Did you guys get arrested at any point?
We were never actually taken away.
We should have been. It's surprising.
I'm shocked, honestly. Like there I'm surprised to hear that there was no major production company behind it because of the level of access that you got in places.
We just if you go in confidently and you just act like you should be there. I mean, when we were behind Hillary with the shirts, it was because I just walked up to the person who was, you know, letting individuals in through this little narrow opening in the gate, to stand behind her. And I said, I'm supposed to be in there. And that was it. So, we just kind of had to do it ourselves.
And also the greatest asset was just being like a white man. Like it was a exercise in white privilege, really. People wanted to like have these two guys go and be at their rallies and be in the front.
I'm still confused about your politics, guys.
Well, you know, if you keep listening, you know, it'll start to crystallize. But
Trump 2016.
It was really. I mean, we've had people along the way say, "Do you think other kinds of people could get away with this?" And the answer is probably not, and it's one of the grim realities of things is that there is a glaring reason that we were able to keep getting away with this. It's because we kind of blend in and we look like the people you expect to be there. But, you know, we also tried to look for some positivity, and I think we found it in the way of, you know, we were all over the country. We met all the supporters for all these candidates. Every time we were, you know, you see 30 seconds of the film, that meant 3 hours standing in line talking with people, 2.5 more hours waiting for the speakers to start. So we met all these people, and I think there are more similarities than there are differences. And, you know, politicians wouldn't have you believe that with the divide in this country right now is only being made greater and being pushed wider by these people. And, you know, it ends up being a little bit of a theme of our film and a little bit of a theme of what we saw on the campaign trail that, you know, a lot of people are decent people and have things in common, but you're not going to feel that way when you're following politics. And, you know, it's really a little bit tragic, but hopefully whatever happens on Tuesday, you know, bridges can be mended a little bit and we can find some common ground.
We could have a big argument there, but that's not, but give me a sense of like what specifically like when you go from the Trump rallies and that was sort of early in the phenomena. Right. So I don't know how it evolved from there. But give me something more concrete along those lines. I mean, obviously, yes, on a human level. But did you notice a difference in terms of like sort of strident political beliefs?
Yes. And we also were at a Pence rally like a month ago. We did a little promo video where we urged Pence to jump ship while wearing ponchos and pretending there was a storm in the room. So it's different. I'm not going to say they're not very different places. I mean, if you go to a Bernie rally or a Hillary rally, people are pretty civil. At this thing, it was like there was definitely some hatred in the room. And then when we gave people a target for that hatred, they were pretty excited to, you know, be pretty physical with us. There was a lot of pulling and pushing and hitting. And one of our camera guys' cameras was taken. And I started getting hit over the shoulders with it. And the cops are getting physical and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, we were fine. We got out. We were fine. But, you know, it is different. I'm not going to say that you don't feel the difference in the room. I mean, anytime Hillary's name is brought up, shouts from all over the place about how, you know, she should be in prison or shot or whatever. It's crazy. It's really crazy.
Oh, let's talk about Jesse Waters, too. I can't let you go without that because that guy is such a, such a douchebag and has been so for a long, long time. And before I saw your video the other day, I had so desperately wanted to go mock him at the I think it was the DNC, and he was just on the move too quickly. But remind people about it. We played it the other day. I mean, did you just stumble on Jesse Waters at one point, or were you tracking him?
No, it was really, really lucky. I like you, have been following him for a long time and just despise him for many different reasons. And the worst is, like, he offends me with how he manipulates footage more than anything. Like, he makes people look like jerks who probably aren't even doing anything stupid. It's just, like, right. That obvious how terrible he is at this. But we saw him a couple times while we were shooting and kind of messed with him a couple times, but we were in our characters. So at the beginning of the video, you see me, like, giving him a hug. He's like, oh, you guys again. Oh, look at you guys.
Did he recognize you?
No. He recognized us. Yeah, he did. He did. Because we ran into him two or three times while we were shooting the movie because he would be at these events. And I like had this fantasy of doing this for so long, and you could probably see it just how happy I am while I'm doing it. I just really don't like this guy, and it just felt as good as you think it feels. That's how good it feels.
And so I'm there with my iPhone, and so we shoot maybe 20 seconds of Jason just giving him a hard time. We're like, all right, what else should we do? And Jason's like, I got to go back again. I got to do it again. So I was like, sure. I mean, we should look around. There's probably a lot of it. He's like, no, I just really, come on, please. I was like, all right, turn the camera back on, and we, you know, catch him 30 yards further down, and he's just like, oh god, here it goes again. And Jason was pretty relentless with it. So.
Oh, so awesome. And the other thing I noticed too in your dynamic with him is that physically you're about his height, and he's a big guy, but and I think he uses that sometimes in different situations as an intimidation factor. And he you know, at one point, like, there was where I noticed, like, he, you go out to touch him, and he tries to, like, brush you away. I mean, it was interesting just to see that, you know, he couldn't quite bully you off him.
Yeah, I know, and I think there's going to be some form of retribution, and I'm looking forward to it. I really am. I really don't like that guy. I just really, really don't like that guy, and I have not heard a good thing from anyone about him.
But I know what you mean. He kind of leans over people and uses it, and it just uses his stature in some sort of weird way. So it's just funny to see him not really be able to exercise that at all.
Yeah, that was great. I really, really enjoyed that. I mean, I think I've watched that maybe 30 times at this point.
Well, thank you.
I mean, it's the best use of stuff that you guys do. Have you guys known each other for a long time, or did you meet at, like, UCB or something like that?
We met in a friend of mine was hosting a comedy show that Devram was performing at years and years ago. And then we were like basketball buddies. We would play basketball together. And we did some sketches together that were really terrible. And then at Occupy Wall Street, we realized, like, oh man, this is crazy. We might be onto something here.
But to answer that, I mean, we've probably known each other for at least 8 years now or so. So the, you know, the improvising in real situations has gotten to be pretty second nature.
Yeah, it's fun. It really works. And where's the best place for people to watch the film? I mean, obviously, I guess it's free if you have Netflix. So
it's free on Netflix. I mean, yeah, if you want to buy it and have it forever, you can download it on iTunes, and we encourage you to do so. But it's streaming on Netflix right now, Undecided the Movie.
All right. And if people want more information on you guys, they can go over to goodliars.com. You can see more of the Occupy Wall Street. And you guys have done some stuff on, there was some funny stuff on the Church of Scientology and Chick-fil-A, and you're doing a Protect the Polls thing with some pretty large weapons. Was it fun to shoot a handgun? I've shot a rifle and a shotgun. I've never shot a handgun, and certainly not that close to a former senator, candidate for president.
It was pretty scary. It was pretty scary. I was feeling so many emotions at that point. I was like, if you fire a gun, like, for the first time, that's probably your big moment for the day. And that day we fired a gun with Rick Santorum
while lying to him and shooting a movie. And then, it was the first day of shooting.
And then we saw Martin O'Malley later that day. Yeah. And then
that's right.
And then we did a tattoo with Rick Santorum later that day too.
Was that a real tattoo? No. Martin O'Malley singing was, I found that a little bit disturbing, I got to say. I don't know why. Maybe that's just I'm, but it was, I'm not going to ruin the bit, but it was really funny. He had to.
It's one of my favorite.
He has a great voice, is your point, I think.
Yeah.
He has a great voice. yes. And, well, people should watch the movie. It's very funny. You guys are great. Congratulations on it. And really appreciate you coming on and talking to us about it.
And say hi to your mom.
Yeah, say hi to your mom.
Hey,
in a good way.
In the nice way. In the benign way.
Bye. I love you.
I love you too.
Love you guys.
Oh,
thank
you. Hey, whoa, whoa, whoa.
What?
Now it did get inappropriate.
That is not.
It's totally appropriate. I love them.
I would start with, like, you guys are great. Maybe the next time you see them, you're like, I really love your work. And then you move on. All right, well, I mean, I'm not going to. But it took me a long time to get to that point with Andy Kindler and to say I love you.
I would love to just watch all that raw footage.
Oh, my God. Yeah, 200 hours. Honestly, that must have been fun. I mean, it sounds like they had to go very quickly. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. What a freebie Friday. My God.
It's incredible.
Well, look, let me just give you a heads up. Just take it easy, everybody. Just calm down. On Tuesday, we're not going to do a show in the middle of the afternoon like we normally do. We're probably going to start sometime around 4, 4:30. Well,
Or 4:30.
Well, we may have a guest at 5.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. For like, you know, an hour, 45 minutes. And then you get 6 p.m.
Yeah, you're already in it.
Polls are going to start to close. You're going to start getting those guys who are not honoring the embargo on. I mean, there's going to be a bunch of stuff to talk about on that day. So what we're doing is we're giving you a lot of material. And on Monday, we have Sam Wong, right? Is that right? Sam Wong will be here. He is the data guy who, with Julian Zelizer, have a podcast. They're both Princeton professors. Sam Wong will be here, and that's to assuage your anxieties.
Bada bada bada.
But with that said, make phone calls this weekend. Tell your friends to go vote.
Gary can still get to 5%, man. Oh wait, I'm sorry.
You know, my thinking on that, at one point I was like, would it be good for the Libertarians to get 5%? Because that'll take some out of the Republicans. But, like, if it's not going to happen this time around, like if the Libertarians can't get 5% on their own from just defections of the Republican Party from a guy who clearly doesn't subscribe to any of their fantastical unicorn-based belief system.
They're a mess.
Then they're a mess.
Sad. But I actually, real quick, I would say that if for any reason anybody in this audience is talking to anybody who is a right voter in particularly Utah, but maybe also Idaho, tell them to vote for Evan McMullen.
Oh, yeah.
That's
Utah,
important.
That could be a big one. I mean, I don't think it's going to come down to that, but it would be that.
But why the hell not?
But that,
put that in play.
That movement could actually have more impact
that
on the Republicans than. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, I will be talking to Andy Kindler.
I sort of wish that it was
God. We are back. Sam Cedar on The Majority Report, the longest show ever produced. Although, I've done a 12-hour show. And I feel like, you know, one of these Fridays, it just could be like, sorry, guys. We're not getting out of here until midnight tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, though, if I had to do a 48-hour show just to have the opportunity to have our next guest on, I would do 49 hours. That's the level of commitment. What? That's the level of commitment I'm talking about. And of course, in that 48th hour and that 58th or 9th minute, I would play this.
With a Jew like Andy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song.
It's a lie.
The true Obama bot. Andy believes Obama can never be wrong.
And so
Andy Kindler .com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your own theme song, Andy Kindler.
Oh, now, my God. It makes me cry every single time.
Are we going to have to change that song when Clinton comes into office? Because you're like a pre-Hillbot.
Oh, yeah. I was born to be a Hillary robot. I was made in the Hillary robot laboratory. Let me tell you something, Sam.
Yeah.
There's no line in music better than with a Jew like Andy Kindler. That's all you need in music.
Now, are you not using that on the road to introduce yourself?
With a Jew like Andy Kindler. No, I didn't, because Jimmy Reefer Cakes wouldn't give me the rights to use it in the club setting, non-exclusive. He tried to charge me a lot of money.
I don't doubt that for a moment, but it occurs to me. Maybe you should have like house bands play you on that way.
Are you saying that my act needs more distractions?
I'm saying it wouldn't hurt.
Right?
Are you still laughing? Oh, no. Andy.
Wait. What? That was my fake laugh machine.
Andy.
Hey, yeah. I'm here.
Go ahead.
I'm here.
You go. What? What did you want to say?
I wanted to say that during the last piece with the Good Liars, they said that I was very surprised to hear this. They said that Rachel Maddow did a long piece on something. That doesn't sound like her. It was a long piece about something. Because she usually keeps things quick, short intros, gets to the topic.
There's no ellipses, is what you're saying.
I'm saying with Rachel Maddow, as I've said before, if there was a national emergency, a real national emergency, she would take a half hour and explain the history of national emergencies.
Reporting on Pearl Harbor would start with there's a fish. And
right,
this fish,
there's a fish in the Pacific Ocean.
Right.
And that fish has a breeding ground.
Right, okay. Exactly. And then it would
migrate. In 1927, Admiral Skinky Boo Boo, it's like she always brings up something in history that you may not have known about it. And if you did know about it, you certainly don't know this amazing fact she knows. And you know what? Watch this space. You should say that, Sam. Watch this space.
You know, that is an old broadcaster thing that I think she picked up from Olbermann, to be honest with you.
But Olbermann, he came by it honestly. Watch this space. The other thing is, and I'm telling this not just to Rachel Maddow.
Right.
If you're not funny, don't try and be funny, because it looks bad. It looks bad. The constant desire to think that you're funny, surrounded by producers who are laughing at you. Those producers don't think you're funny.
I have to say that the one piece of advice I find myself, and sometimes I, you know, hook up people who are trying to do political campaigns with comedians and whatnot, and they try and write copy for it, and they're like, how is this? Give me some feedback. And my feedback is always, Do not try to make a joke. If you think you've written a joke in any of this copy, take it out now, because the one way you will alienate any comedian that you give this to is by trying to be funny, because you're not. And they won't I can make this funnier. They'll just go like, F this guy.
Well, you know, like, I know you wrote some of Trump's Al Smith dinner material.
A little bit.
And
a little
bit. Very solid. But you shouldn't open the joke with the premise of your joke shouldn't be Hillary was kicked off the Watergate committee. It's true. It's true.
I thought the hating Catholics, really despising, because my original pitch was she thinks you're all Catholic scumbags.
That's right.
Did not get
it's interesting
the
that Hillary should be here. Interesting Hillary should be here when I know that she thinks you're all scumbag, Catholic scumbag.
All right, Andy, this is what I need you here for, okay?
Every
right,
single
sorry,
one.
Apologies.
This is not apologies. Because also I want to talk about what's going on with you and Twitter as of late, because there's some concern. But
the Jimmy Dore thing, or
no? I didn't see that. Wait a second. Whoa! That I'm not concerned
no,
about.
No big.
Wait, I want to hear this.
Not a big thing.
Well, because you know, I'm.
Well, Jimmy Dore simply said that someone, he's arguing with somebody, and someone said, "Oh, Nader's responsible for the Iraq War." Well, he opposed the Iraq War. And Hillary was for it. And I said, "Yeah, I'm talking about the fact." You know, so I said something. I'm talking about the fact that because Gore wasn't in office, Gore would not have lied us into war. So that's the last. But that didn't. That's all.
Oh, all right. No, I wasn't talking.
He
about
hasn't come
that.
Back.
I mean,
that's a great
I think the
point,
Nader
Andy.
Thing cuts a couple of different ways.
Oh wow, Andy was so persuasive on Twitter.
I said it better then.
I love the way
very,
he
I'm
said.
I'm very articulate.
And he doesn't like all of the anchors who insult Hillary or Barack, and just very persuasive.
Right.
Thank you, Andy. I love the state of comedy address.
Let's.
who is this?
That's
a little Gore. Doing?
It's Michael.
That's a little Gore.
Is that you doing Jimmy Dore?
No! It's Al Gore. That's his Al Gore.
I haven't heard of it in a long time.
You know, I'll tell you something.
It wasn't really that bad.
Michael was floating on air at how much you were laughing at his Al Gore. And then when you said, is that Jimmy Dore? He just dropped like a lead balloon.
I just totally deflated. I thought Andy was
in.
Jimmy Dore
in
does
there.
Not sound anything
box.
Like that.
I actually can't do it.
Say lockbox.
Lockbox, Andy.
Right.
I can't do it, Jimmy Dore.
All right, but wait a second. Andy, I want to get your take on this this sound. Now, Andy, nobody is as fair as you are. So I would play a Melania Trump sound to you because I know how fair you are as a person. For some reason, and I guess the theory is like, you know, they haven't had a lot of Trump surrogates on TV as of late because, you know, all this BS FBI stuff. The golden rule of politics is like, you know, when your opponent's in trouble, don't step on that narrative. But they brought Melania Trump out to give a speech. And I want you to listen to what the thrust of this speech was. It was about making our society more civil, particularly on social media. Here is her making that argument.
I do worry about all of our children. As we know, now social media is a centerpiece of our lives. It can be a useful tool for connection and communication. It can ease the isolation that so many people feel in the modern world. Technology has changed our universe. But like anything that is powerful, it can have a bad side. We have seen this already. As adults, many of us are able to handle mean words, even lies. Children and teenagers can be fragile. They are hurt when they are made fun of or made to feel less in looks or intelligence. This makes their life hard and can force them to hide and retreat. Our culture has gotten too mean and too rough, especially to children and teenagers. It is never okay when a 12-year-old girl or boy is mocked, bullied, or attacked. It is terrible when that happens on the playground, and it is absolutely unacceptable when it's done by someone with no name hiding on the internet.
Okay.
On the internet, Dracula will attack you on the internet.
But total low energy speech.
Do you think that she, I mean, the irony can't be lost on her? That one of...
Yes, it can.
I guess it can.
She is reading off of those teleprompters. I mean, it's distracting and kind of... I feel bad for her.
I'm glad that she can read. You never said that you love me, Kelly. You never say, I love you. I love... Like, I'd be leaving the studio and you go, I love that guy.
But you're
never.
But you're coming back on the show. I know you're back on the show.
Yeah.
All right, but wait a second. I want you to comment on this notion.
Yes.
That Melania Trump is talking about how mean social media can be, and how
she might as well have said many times they will say take someone's name and they will say they are crooked. Or they will say lying. They'll call someone lying.
They're fat, they'll or like, eating machines, or stupid. Or they might, as an example, say a reporter with muscular dystrophy. They shake their body and go, I don't remember. It's a terrible thing.
Or maybe they will
thing.
Just say sad at the end of a tweet because they're so pathetic as humans that they just can't end with the insult.
Or
on the internet.
At home, they could say, I don't know any of those 11 women. None
That's
of them.
Right.
Or they might be married, but still be on a tour bus with Billy Bush and say that they sexually assault women to brags. All of these things can happen.
I am very, very, that's my foreign person. I'm very, very, very worried about the toddlers. The toddlers and the young people. First of all, it is a bit that she's doing. Like, she's trying to make Trump stuff sound more hilarious with a crazy accent. You cannot explain to me how that's not either a bit or it's the Good Liars are somehow involved with it. How do you give a speech like that? They put the wrong speech in the teleprompter?
Do you know the amazing thing about this is that I challenge anyone to show me an example of anybody on cable news or on the network news who doesn't say when they bring up Melania, she has been a total class act. Like the accolades that have been showered on her. Now compare this to what Elliot Spitzer's wife got, or what Huma Abedin got, or what Hillary Clinton got when their husbands were accused of anything even remotely like what Donald Trump is. Like, has anybody ever uttered the words, Melania Trump seems to be enabling Donald Trump? Like, she doesn't seem to get any of the criticism that we would see from any other wife out there. I mean, Democratic or Republican, for that matter. It is
But Trump said, for example, the thing is, like, I really do feel like this is a nightmare that just goes so far beyond. I remember when I used to watch political arguments, you know, it's like, we got you, the panda bear, you were for it before you were against it. And, you know, all these things that were never even actual things that were wrong about politicians. But the other day he said that Huma Abedin shouldn't be allowed to live with Anthony Weiner. That's what Donald Trump said.
That's a fair point.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Obviously, she's not going to. But yeah, the things he's been saying have been so. People forget. He suggested that she be assassinated, Hillary Clinton. He suggested that he would tell his attorney general to indict her. I mean, the bar has been so. Like, I have a buddy in London who saw the front page of the New York Times today, which suggested that Donald Trump, they have looked at his financial statements and realized that he has been calling revenue for his businesses income.
Yeah.
And so he's been like incredibly overstating his wealth. And he emailed me, goes like, this disclosure is going to be huge. And I'm like, dude, what, like you think anybody, like,
yeah.
They've been painting, this guy has been like, you know, like somewhere between Hitler and Stalin and just a, you know, sort of a run of the mill rapist. And, people are going to care that he's been overstating his income for
I am not a run-of-the-mill rapist. I happen to be tremendous.
I mean, the...
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing that drives me crazy. It's 5 days before the election. I'm watching CNN, which CNN, Jeff Zucker is the worst human being on the planet. And there's nobody's ever... I mean, he's universally loathed, and he's, you know, he's like... trashing Donna Brazile, and it's, you know, it's like, and it's 5 days, and Chris Cuomo, who is like an infotainment, a handsome reporter of some type, they're just, it's 5 days before the election, and I hear Brian Stelter talk about what great comic timing Trump has. They have never, these cable people have never pivoted to say, at one point, don't, look, it's over. We're no longer ever, we're not going to ever, we're not covering him. We're not going to, every time we cover him, we're going to preface it with the racist or the fascist. They're still, after all of these things that you've said, they're still in cable news thinking that it's the lesser of two evils after all this time.
I mean, I got to say, I don't know. Look, there's no way that news can't cover Donald Trump. But I do think that the failure has been in not covering any policies and spending so much time on the emails. The people I really think who have enabled Donald Trump, the number one.
Scarborough.
No, it's not even the media. I mean, I have obviously a lot of issues with Scarborough and the rest of the media, but
except Mark Halperin, who's your best friend.
Oh, you want to talk Mark Halperin? This is actually pretty funny. You know, Brian
don't,
Williams.
Don't forget what you were going to say, though. Don't forget.
Okay. Well, I mean, the people who have been enabling Donald Trump have been Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and the Republican
right.
leadership. They are really the only people who could have given license to the press to totally disregard Donald Trump. Because
the cowards.
The cowardice of those two guys or the despicability. I mean, I don't know. It's an age-old question. Are they evil or just cowardly? But it doesn't
Paul
matter.
Ryan's always been a fraud. Paul Ryan's always been a fraud.
Always.
He like is the only GOP guy who can add long division. So he has a couple of different numbers. He goes, oh yeah, 30%. He's able to go 30% of GDP. So he's the smartest member of that party. But he's evil. He really is.
But if he had come out,
but he has beautiful blue eyes.
Beautiful blue eyes. But if he'd used those blue eyes for good and had come out and said, look, I'm not endorsing Donald Trump, I'm not voting for Donald Trump, that would have given license to the media to pile on Trump even more. But put that aside, you mentioned Mark Halperin. This I thought was really interesting. Because it's not something I thought that I would hear from Brian Williams. Here's Brian.
Oh, last night?
Yes.
Last night?
Yeah. I mean, I should remind people that there has been nothing that has played on cable news in the past 24 hours that Andy has not seen in real time. But here it is.
That's an actual fact. That I have both seen, except I never watch Fox News because that's, I'm not an idiot.
That would give you a heart attack. But here
I have CNN and MSNBC going at all times because you know I can watch in the past on one thing and then go to the other area.
Here is Brian Williams on the 11th hour last night sitting with Mark Halperin.
And Mark Halperin, to you, I say this with charity in my heart as an every evening and weekly viewer. When Donald Trump complains that he is not getting favorable coverage in the MSM, he has not been listening to you this cycle. I think you've gone out of your way to find the path, argue for the path, forge the path for him in an argumentative way with your co-host to the nomination tonight. I thought you were interestingly optimistic. Where are you getting the path of positivity you laid out on your broadcast?
Well, it's not a question of optimism. It's a question of looking at the data and looking at what's going on in the battleground states. Yeah. I agree with Steve. She's still overwhelmingly the favorite. She has many more paths. She's got the demographics on her side. She's got the recent Electoral College history that heavily favors the Democratic Party.
That was, I mean, look, that was about as much of a smackdown as you could get. Andy, what's going on there?
Well, here's the thing. I've gotten into arguments with people I actually like, people on Twitter who I shouldn't be getting into arguments with because I actually I'll give you just an example. I like that Jon Favreau guy, right? Who was the speechwriter for
the speechwriter, as opposed to the guy from Swingers?
Yeah, so I get in an argument with him because I say something about Breonna Keeler because I have watched every single minute of everybody's coverage. So there was something about how Breonna Keeler covers things, and I said she's a horrible reporter because I don't talk nicely on Twitter many times. I said she's a horrible reporter, and I've seen her in Cuomo.
She's a CNN reporter. Right. Sorry.
And all they do is they take any story that's from Judicial Watch or about the Clinton Foundation, and then they immediately say the Clinton Foundation is like they just come from the point of view of that it's a corrupt organization. And then I've seen this on so many mornings. And then so when he challenges me, I go, no, she's a very good reporter. No, she's not a very good reporter. I've seen these things. I've watched more. So I'm not bragging. It's ridiculous I've watched this much. So I remember years ago when Mark Halperin, when the birther thing started, he said, this is what the Republican Party needs. This is what galvanizes the base, is this birther stuff. So he's been a huge Trump supporter. And then, and I don't know if people know this, he was a Pilates, he did Pilates at a GOP mega donors retreat.
What?
Case,
Mark?
Your witness. Yeah, yes, he was doing Pilates with Ann Romney at some mega donors GOP retreat.
Wait, and then David Halperin, Mark Halperin is a Pilates instructor?
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but he tries, I guess. I wasn't there. I didn't evaluate his Pilates. That's what he was doing.
Really hard to believe.
No, I mean, Pilates, believe me, it's very...
Pilates is tough.
Oh, it's tough. Super
very
tough.
Hard to do.
Oh, my God.
I can't believe that you guys... Focus on the Pilates.
What else do you expect us to take from that?
Oh, well, I don't need to be convinced that Mark Halperin is all those things and more.
And how about Jay Heil, who blocked me just because I say horrible things about him every day? I mean, they're like Scrooge and Marley. And all of a sudden, MSNBC is, you know what, we don't have enough programming. We're going to switch to a Bloomberg show now. What other network switches to a show from another net, from Bloomberg?
I'll tell you something. That's the thing. Halperin is a host on that show, right, with the other guy. And
Jon Heil.
Yeah, and Heilman. And I think...
I'm sorry.
You know,
I messed up. Yeah,
when
John Heilman blocked you.
Oh. When Brian Williams said that, I mean, that, you know, this is sort of like... sort of a little bit off point, but I was very surprised that Williams said that, because that if I was Halperin, I would be like calling my agent and saying, they're not going to renew us at MSNBC. We're going to get, because if Ryan Williams is saying that about you on there on air, I don't think that's going to help your fortunes there. I just found that really interesting.
I was walking around the apartment, because I walk around the apartment with these headphones on and I listen all day and all night. So I didn't see Mark Halperin's physical facial reaction to what he
You're
was saying.
You're missing a lot.
You got to watch it when we post. You cannot believe that he doesn't move. He doesn't move. He doesn't. His jaw is just locked, and his bottom lip is almost fully overlapping his nose. He is so...
He got schlong.
So angry.
Big time.
I just tweeted to you guys, or just tweeted in general, Mark Halperin and Romney to host Sun. This was like in 2015, to host Sunrise Pilates for GOP mega donors.
Wow.
Wait, Andy, No. Are you not tweeting while you're on the show, right?
Are you kidding me? I'm tweeting. I'm also updating my notifications in my Facebook. Add some more information to the joke page.
He's not only tweeting. He's optimizing his website.
He's
right
also
now
Instagramming
with meta tags.
I'm weighing out the grams on my Instagram page. Hello.
Before the show, I recommended that. Well, I suggested that maybe you could have a day where maybe you could do Pilates and just not go on Twitter. Also,
no, your problem with me on Twitter is a real problem, and your problem with me on Twitter is the type of thing where about 3 weeks from now I will be found dead on the floor of my apartment in the middle of a reply. In the middle of a reply to what we find out later is not even a person. It's a Nazi robot machine that I am arguing with that has figured out a computer program that knows how to push my buttons with every reply. There is no God or New Age, whatever it is, and I will be dead because I have a serious, serious emotional problem.
I got to say
it's
that
a Twitter problem.
Almost not a day goes by where I don't get someone tweeting at me like, Andy Kindler's blocked me and I don't know why. Please help me.
Well, if I blocked them by mistake, then tell me about
it. Wait, do you
some
remember?
I don't have time for that.
Wait, do you remember, do you remember when we did the request line to get unblocked by Andy on the IMs? We did that segment. And yes, you IM'd at the right time and were persuasive enough. And Andy's actually quite as fast as he is to block, he's as fast as he is to unblock.
That could be a member benefit of the show.
Never unblock. He's
Who?
A horrible person who listens to your show.
Who?
He's a guy who argues with me, some kind of a guy, I think in Wisconsin. And he's like an activist of some type. And he was he didn't like that I hate Bill Maher. And he started, Bill Maher's not even. He's not running for president, and oh my God, I will never unblock that guy. I can't remember his name.
Well, we don't have to get specific, but if you want to,
yes,
go over the
do.
List.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, try
yes,
to find
we
him.
Do. Listen, loves to serial kill 666 at Apple.
All right, let's talk about
Ricky Vaughn 99.
Let's talk about the Trump kids for a moment, shall we, Andy? I mean,
wait, are you guys really worried about me? Because I have such low self-esteem.
What? And, no, we're not really worried
I would
about
take,
you.
I would take a little tech detox, that's all.
Well, if you have low you should have high self-esteem because if I didn't like you, then I wouldn't care. I'd be like, oh, Andy Kindler's going to die in his apartment on the floor because of a tweet bot.
Well, I'm hoping the election, after the election, that
things calm down.
Is wound up.
Oh yeah, no, I'm sure.
I'm so depressed about the election.
Why are you depressed, Andy? You're nervous.
Nervous.
Don't be nervous. It's going
to
be fine.
No, I think we're going to. I'm confident that we're going to win. I mean, I know you guys are like, maybe I'll go with Jill Stein at the last moment.
You know what? You have not been listening to the show, and I'm actually a little offended. I'm a little offended.
I wish it was switched and Bill Weld was at the top of the ticket.
Maybe you haven't been listening to the show.
My favorite thing of all time, though, Michael, is the way, what's his name, said, what is Aleppo? Like he's talking to his niece at a party.
And what is Aleppo?
What the kids are into today.
Whoa,
like,
really?
Like a kid runs up to him and goes, I have Aleppo. And what is Aleppo? Pray
and
tell.
What is Aleppo?
Like,
and
Andy,
what is
did
Aleppo?
What is Aleppo?
Did you watch
so
the...
That's the best way to figure out what someone's talking about that you think you should have known.
Unless you're on Morning Joe and you're running for president.
Morning Joe.
Oh,
did
I
you
guess...
see Morning Joe today? Did anyone see
no.
Morning
no,
Joe?
No,
I,
of course
I,
not.
This is why we stay
Morning
healthy.
Morning Joe is blaming the Democrats. It's
Hold on for
the
one
Democrats.
Second. Can I just tell people, you're calling from California. Morning Joe is on at like 3 a.m. there.
That's the problem. Kelly knows what she's... Kelly, who's probably monitoring me with WebMD or something, is about to do an intervention.
Andy, have you seen the Trump in Hindi ad? The Trump's...
What is that?
Oh, all right. We're going to play it for you.
Well, he can watch it on the YouTube channel.
Hindi is the language that's spoken in India, one of several. But it's, this is his outreach to Hindus and Indians.
Yeah, and if you want to see this, obviously we have it on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Sam Cedar.
Subscribe today.
And then also we have a special youtube.com/Sam Cedar.forAndyKindler section. But here is Trump. He's doing an ad for, I guess, what?
Well, it's just an outreach to Indian, Hindu and Indian Americans. Yeah. And this is what he thinks is going to get him over the finish line. Check this out, Andy.
Abhi Ki Bar, Trump, Sarkar.
We love the Hindus. We love India.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
It's real.
That is a real ad.
My God. You know, I have to say that when someone's sincere, I'm the first person to say, hey, look, he sounds like it came from the heart.
They actually had to do a cut in his first three words.
No, for real. We slowed it down. Actually, you should watch our YouTube clip because we slowed it down.
All right. Andy, I want to get your reaction to this, okay? Because, I mean, I've read people who have speculated at, like, what's going on with the Trump kids? And, you know, how abusive is Donald Trump? Here is Eric Trump on KHOW program with Ross Kaminsky. And
he's good.
They're talking about David Duke. It's interesting to see how upset the Trump son is that the David Duke is in any way trying to ride the coattails of his dad. Really shocking. Here it is.
Questions in the short time I've got left with you. I saw the lead piece at Politico yesterday. It just jumped out at me as one of the most obvious hit pieces of all time, and yet it raises an issue that your dad's campaign still needs to deal with. And what they showed, this picture of David Duke, a guy who desperately needs a bullet in the head, as far as I can tell. They showed him walking down the street smiling, and basically they're trying to tie him into support of your dad's campaign, and they're gonna, you know, set up be poll watchers in places. And what the left has tried to do to your dad's campaign the whole time is said, you know, it's basically an arm of some white nationalist movement or something. Can you respond to that?
Ross, it's disgusting. And I think, by the way, if I said exactly what you said, I'd get killed for it. But I think I'll say it anyway. The guy does deserve a bullet. I mean, these aren't good people.
Like father.
I love the way the first guy goes. He deserves a bullet in his head as far as he can tell. Like, there's a way you can tell if someone needs a bullet in his head. As far as I've analyzed the situation with David Duke, and I found, you know, he needs a bullet in his head. Which Trump kid was that? Use or Kude? Which one was?
I don't know which. I think that's Kude, isn't it? I mean, Eric, I got a story about Use. And let me just preface this by saying, we have not been able to verify this. To a certain extent. But there's a guy named Scott Melker on Facebook who, and I would imagine this would be not too difficult to debunk. But and so let me just say it with this story is on Facebook. And I don't know if it's verified, but... But since, you know, this is what seems to be passing for media these days. As many of you know, I attended the University of Pennsylvania with Donald Trump Jr. I feel compelled to share the story before the election. I was hanging out in a freshman dorm with some friends next door to Donald Jr.'s room. I walked out of the room to find Donald Trump at his son's door, there to pick him up for a baseball game. There were quite a few students standing around watching, trying to catch a glimpse of the famed real estate magnate. Don Jr. opened the door wearing a Yankee jersey. Without saying a word, his father slapped him across the face, knocking him to the floor in front of all his classmates. He simply said, "Put on a suit and meet me outside," and closed the door. And then he goes on to say, Donald Jr. was a drunk in college. Every memory I have of him is stumbling around campus or passing out in public. He absolutely despised his father, hated the attention that his last name afforded him. His nickname was Diaper Don because of his tendency to fall asleep drunk in other people's beds and urinate. I always felt terrible for him.
Not good.
And he goes on to say, like, you know, I have to say that that story sounds pretty credible to me.
Yeah.
Because I also think that Donald Trump Sr. was, I get the sense that he is a product of abuse.
One doubt about it, and it's from, I'm not even being entirely facetious. Did we not forget watching Donald Trump try to slap Bobby Knight's hand the other day and the type of physical coordination that he displayed? I don't know if that could translate into a slap across the face. This is a very uncoordinated
guy. I don't know.
Guy.
My understanding is total that, no, mess. My understanding is that he actually was a good athlete when he was younger. I mean, that is, I've heard that.
Well, he says he is. He definitely says he's like a great golfer. Like, he lies about everything, so I don't even know. But, you know, maybe he seemed like he was able to, he was good at, I don't know. The thing is, you know how everybody says that Hollywood, the Hollywood Access Live tape wasn't shocking to, like, you didn't. That tape was shocking to me because I just thought he was an evil, racist, fascist. I never went further than that. I just knew he was a horrible person in every way. But the way he is on that tape is he's even worse than I thought he was on that tape. Like an animal who thinks that he's, I can't even explain it. It was so embarrassing. And maybe because I'm not a woman, I've never been had experienced that. But the look on the face of the woman that was greeting them, it was so embarrassing. I thought it almost made me cry of how, like, this woman has to withstand the hideous Billy Bush. It was horrifying to me. And maybe that's my own naivete because in my own life, I don't know men like that or something.
But
I've
that contradicts some of the things that you've said to me on DM over Twitter, though, Andy.
Easy, locker room, virtual locker room.
You know, when you're a stand-up comic, you can do all sorts of things.
Look, I once said to you in the locker room, I said, look at the bazoombas. Did you see the bazoombas on her? Also, I say, I do her.
Maybe no, isn't it your big catchphrase? You wouldn't kick that out of bed.
Yeah, wouldn't you? I wouldn't make her leave the bed because of cracker chewing.
You know what? I got to imagine for you. That is a high compliment because it is not hard for me to imagine that any type of crumbs in the bed for you is a big problem.
Please leave.
Oh, I don't like it. I'm like the prince and the pea. If I see a woman on the street, I'll walk up to her and go, yeah, you're looking at me. You're looking at me. You don't think I saw it? Yeah, you say no, but you mean yes. Occasionally I've had conversations like that. Hey, baby cakes. I'm sorry, these are the actual things Bill Maher said. Hey, baby cakes.
Baby cakes?
Bill Maher, what? Bill
Maher? Oh, God. You know, he's a misogynist, Bill Maher. You know he's a misogynist. Remember he used to, like, greet the women with the, hello, baby. Or remember he used to make the women
kiss them on the show? That is actually such a good Bill Maher impression.
Hello,
I just
baby.
Heard that. That's so good.
Wait, is this why I hate him? Is this why I hate him? Because I can't even remember why I hate him. It's been so long.
He's creepy towards. He has a creepy anti. He has a creepy misogynist energy. My old job.
Oh boy! All right. Well,
But I kid the comedian who still can't deliver jokes after doing it for 40 years.
Andy, will you promise to call in Tuesday night? You can call in early enough so that if you're in too much of a state of catatonia, it'll be okay. But
yeah, if I'm starting to get worried, I'm not going to call in because I'm going to be so depressed. But
right,
if it looks like it's going well, and you're going to be on, yeah, of course.
We'll probably start, close to 1 or 2 p.m. Pacific time.
Oh, okay, cool, man.
Pacific time. Pacific time. Kelly is just having a nervous breakdown. Like somehow the whole world's going to come to end if we do a long show on Tuesday.
I don't mind
the long show. It's just going to be longer that I'm just having an anxiety attack while doing the show.
Hey, nothing makes the listener want to listen more than when one of the participants is complaining about how long it's going to be. Oh, no, I'm totally on board. You know, if you guys were like a morning zoo team, you'd be like, yeah, we're going to be on all day and night on election day.
That's right.
With the Y95 funny van.
That's right.
Come
on, Kelly. What better place to be than in that studio for 12 to 15 to 18 hours?
We're going to do this all night. Well, Andy Kindler, it is always a pleasure.
I love you.
I love you, Andy. I love you,
Kelly.
Oh, wait.
And we've built this for a long
time. I love you too, Andy.
Michael. I love that guy, Michael. Oh, I love
what about
that.
Matt?
Seriously? Matt, I love that guy. I love that guy, Matt. I've never heard anybody talk about me so wistfully as Kelly talked about.
Love you, Andy. Hope you stay safe.
Yeah, I know. It was pretty. It was...
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
All right, bye-bye. All right. We're only going to do 2 more hours. I think it's going to be a freebie Friday.
I'm not complaining about the length of the show. I thought originally we were going to do 2 separate shows, and I even voted for that, which would have been longer. But it's just going to be such a buildup of... It's like watching a sports game.
Well, I think we're going to try and maybe put out a podcast. Like, we'll talk about this later. Why would we subject people to this? The number is 646-257-3920. And you got to be on point. I don't know what the point it would
Thank
be.
Thank you for calling in the Majority Report. The host will be with you.
Okay. But let's talk about the election, your thoughts about the election. We're 2 days away now, at least 2 business days.
And we will give our predictions on Monday.
But it's... What's that?
Oh, was the that call the, waiting music.
Oh, I thought they had that lowered enough. Bear with me, folks. I've got to get this up here. Okay. All right. We got a caller on hold for a long time. We'll take this call. Calling from a 515 area code. Who's this?
Oh, hey, this is Sanjeeva from Ames, Iowa.
Hi, Sanjeeva. What's happening?
I kind of got a Lord of the Rings analogy with Donald Trump and I guess the people who support him. Like, just hear me out. Like, Donald Trump is kind of like that necromancer, the necromancer form of Sauron in The Hobbit. And I think if the GOP continues to obstruct and we as progressives don't get anything done, then we'll get a bigger Sauron. It will come out in a form which a real fascist will take over in the United States, maybe by 2020. And I'm thinking that the next 2020 Republican nominee might be Michael Flynn, like the Trump's like defense person. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I don't think it will be a Flynn, but I think it'll be like someone like a Cotton who will be saying a lot of the same stuff. I mean, I don't know if that person will be able to get elected, but I think you're right. I mean, the Democrats have to make the Republicans pay a greater price, and the only way they can do that, it seems to me, is to have a very, very specific, different, and progressive agenda so they can promise to deliver something, not just avoid these people. And the path to delivering something is to destroy, you know, essentially the Republican hold on our politics. I appreciate the call. I got to run through these, but thanks. Right. Good point. Calling from a 509 area code. Who's this?
Sam, this is Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan, how are you?
Pretty good. I was just sitting here when my alpha brain was like, you should call the Sam Sears show. My alpha male brain. And I was like, if he's got a problem with that, then I'll just take him behind the high school and kick his ass. Because I'm...
Who did you say that to? Did you say that to yourself?
I said it. Yeah.
Did you have a problem with it?
No, I said, if you have a problem with it, then I'll take you behind the high school. Never mind. Okay. It wasn't that funny. But I was going to call in. I tried to call in on Monday as Jimmy Carter, but you didn't get to my call, which is really sad. I had some good dick jokes lined up. But, hey, I wanted to talk real quick about the Jill Stein Podesta email thing. One thing that happened here locally, we had a in our district, we had a good progressive candidate. And when the caucus came around, you know, Bernie came to our town, which is very conservative, but he was able to fill a stadium. There's a lot of enthusiasm. And as soon as the caucus ended, a lot of the people who were coming out and volunteering, his campaign left the state. And all that energy, all the, you know, the people who were coming out for him, it totally went away. And we have open primaries, so the Democrat lost. And it seems to me that that sort of lack of drive, I mean, politics is work. And we're seeing an extension of that with this whole idea that you could just that your protest is by not voting or voting third party, and as if that were going to accomplish something. And the wrong thing is being learned by these emails. I think they're really informative, but, you know, there was one recently from 2014 where they were discussing, the Hillary people were discussing the order of the primaries and how to stack the primaries in a way that would benefit her. And what I hear people saying is, well, it's rigged. She's corrupt. But it seems to me that the real takeaway is, holy shit, we basically need to start working now for the next election. And that you need to, you know, think about those things.
You need to strategize. And you need to, I mean, politics is about strategizing and impacting the system. I mean, look, I continue to believe, and I've talked to people who have been associated with the Sanders campaign, that had Bernie Sanders started a year earlier and had actually believed a year earlier that he could win, that he could have very well won. I mean, I don't think he, from my understanding, in terms of like when he started to actually like really believe that he could win, that didn't happen until like January or February of this year.
Right.
And it's unfortunate. And I think part of the reason why he didn't run was he may have been waiting to see if Elizabeth Warren was going to run, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but with all that said, look, the protest vote, there's only one or two ways that you can decide that you're going to vote for Jill Stein, it seems to me. And, you know, I think largely this is moot, but one is you want to build the Green Party. And my response to that is, you know, look, if there's no other option in terms of building, I mean, for me in New York State, I have the Working Families Party. And when I asked Jill Stein via video in that TYT forum, like, what's the plan to grow the Green Party? Because I thought maybe I haven't seen it. And she just has been articulating it. And she had zero plan. Not a bad plan.
Yeah.
Not a bad plan, not a plan I disagreed with. She had no plan. She articulated
no plan.
And that was a big, big argument as to why to vote for the Green Party. And then the other one is, if you genuinely think that this is to be an expression, that a vote is not a tool, but rather a mode of expression, and you want to punish the Democrats, then you might as well go vote for Trump, because otherwise you're not doing anything. There's no historical basis to believe that if Jill Stein gets 2% or 3% 4% that the Democrats are going to do anything different. And there's no reason to believe that they will if Trump gets elected either. In fact, the evidence is they move to the right.
Yeah, the spoiler thing is a PR problem, even if you don't buy that it's true. And I hear a lot of people say, you know, they try to debunk the idea that there are spoilers. That's fine. You can debunk it. But that's at the very least a PR problem they've had for almost 20 years. And so you would think that, you know, by January of 2001, they would have had some sort of response to that. But, you know, here we are in 2016.
But if you want to, if you want to send a message, why wouldn't you want to be a spoiler? Like, I mean, if the message
that's a whole different. Right.
I mean, unless you think you have the ability to calibrate what the exact amount of percentage is going to make the Democrats in the future believe that if they move to the left, they'll get this amount of votes as opposed to moving to the right without being a spoiler. I mean, and that's impossible. I mean, so it's all it's a bunch of silliness. I mean, you know, and frankly, I'm just not that impressed with. With what the Green Party has done. And so for me, I have another option. That's the Working Families Party. Most people don't have that option.
But, do you think that you as a sort of a independent media person, you know, what do you think the role of the independent left media is in trying to organize the left? Because that seems to be a problem that it, there's just,
you know, that was something that
I don't know.
when I was on AM talk radio on a daily show, literally having an audience of millions as opposed to tens or hundreds of thousands. That was I felt compelled to do a lot more of that in this situation.
Hurting cats a little bit.
Well, I mean, look, you're on mass media. You have a much better tool. Like, you know, I could say, like, people call the New York Times. People, you know, support this politician. Buy this book. Sign up for this. Go to this website and organize around that. And there was enough people who would hear it, who would do it. Now, I think there's more value in educating people and hoping that people who listen to the show go out and do that in their communities because right. The size of the reach. I mean, you know, but that's, you know, other people do what they do. I don't know. But all right.
Hey,
gotta go.
Take care of yourself.
You take care of yourself. A square. Oh, wait, this is not necessarily apropos of anything except for just like, you know, I think there's definitely an apocalyptic feeling in the air. And I think Donald Trump would be highly problematic. But I think what's going on in this community in Texas, let's play this audio, Matt. This community in Texas is indicative of, I don't get the sense that there's going to be a bunch of liberals in this community. But apparently in Texas, guy is making it's prepper meets gated community. And here it is. Oh. Here we go.
Over the next few years, fields of grass will conceal 400 underground bunkers, a tunnel system, even a vault to store your DNA, all part of a plan to prepare for any impending doomsday.
You get life assurance when stuff really gets bad, and while you're at it, you live in a five-star resort waiting for that doomsday.
Developers are sparing no expense. 3 white sand lagoons, a gun range, golf course, even a polo field are part of the plan. So is a massive solid marble fountain at the entrance that rivals any you'll see in Las Vegas.
It'll be one of the largest water features in the world when it's finally done.
Reaction to the development spokesperson Richie Witt says has been mixed.
Well, probably that it's another one of those doomsday cults that are, you know, stocking cans and burying their money out back. And we're so far from that.
It's also far away from any major metropolitan area. One of the reasons developers picked this property.
It's out of what security experts will call the threat zone.
A development with its sights set on the future. In an area that makes living off the grid look easy.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. That really combines it, right? Everything you need to know. All those millionaires going to be in that community with the gun range and the polo.
I have to confess,
polo ground.
Maybe it's just where I'm from in the country, but I
live there.
I wouldn't mind having some sort of hideout like that.
Oh no, I wouldn't mind it either.
I just want to hide out with bagels and marijuana and Woody Allen films. Is that your Jew hideout?
No.
What's the difference between your hideout and Matt's hideout?
Probably just the
less gun ranges.
No, I don't know. I think I don't know. Just the amount of audiobooks that would be stored. I guess. I have no idea.
How would you have internet connectivity in there?
Oh, they have connectivity. Don't you worry about that. Huh? What would I do? I'd play video games. I mean, if I was hiding out and the apocalypse was coming, I'd just play video games.
Hiding out, you'd play video games, no reading?
Get back into it. No. I'm done with that. Are you kidding? I got to brush up on my video game skills. Oh, yeah. Should we do this Peter Thiel thing?
Yes.
All right. Here is Peter Thiel at the National Press. It was a little bit long. Remember, this is the billionaire who sank Gawker by bankrolling multiple lawsuits against Gawker. And what are the reasons why we have a free press in this country? Obviously, the First Amendment, but our libel laws are such that if you're the press has more protection than, let's say, in Great Britain, and if you're going to sue a publication, you will get a lawyer who will take your case on contingency only if they think that that case has merit. But if you're a billionaire and you want to destroy a publication, you can bankroll these suits so that the lawyer is not on a 33% contingency or whatever it is, but is actually on retainer. You're a billionaire. I'm going to give this lawyer $1 million and they're just going to handle these cases.
No kidding.
And here he is. This is the Trump supporting Peter Thiel explaining why he bankrolled at least one of these. I don't think he cops to bankrolling the multitudes of lawsuits that he did, but here it is.
I strongly believe in the First Amendment. I believe journalists are a privileged group in our society.
So.
They play important role in getting us information in our system of checks and balances, but these were not journalists.
Well, do you think what happened to Gawker could happen to other news publications? I mean, could wealthy, powerful people seek revenge against a news organization because of something they didn't like and use their influence and money to take them out?
Hold on, pause it for 1 second. Is that Heilman interviewing him? We can't see him. But I like how he doesn't even address the fact, like, what do you mean they're not journalists? Now, the First Amendment is not an issue here, right? Because it's not the government censoring. But this argument that they're not journalists, like, I'm sorry, do you really get to choose who's a journalist here? I don't think so. I come up with my own definition. Here we go.
Wealthy people shouldn't do that. I think if they try, they won't succeed. You know, it's the you know, Gawker was a pretty flimsy business. It was a bad business. It didn't make that much money, but they
didn't
could
make that much money.
All the lawsuits. You know, they lost because of an enormous verdict that came in against them. That's why they lost at the end of the day. I could have underwritten, you know, many more lawsuits. That wasn't the problem. The problem was that they lost on the facts.
Pause it. First of all, he did underwrite many more lawsuits. It wasn't just the Hulk Hogan one. And secondly, they got the lawsuit, but they didn't have the money to launch the appeal that most people thought they were going to win.
They weren't even making any money, so that's
first
of all.
They were making money, just not a lot of money.
Well, yeah, a lot of, none, whatever, all gross.
So people were getting paid. People were getting health care. People had jobs. The owner was making some money.
Yeah.
But not a lot of money.
The poor
That's
man.
The way we define journalism now.
I was very careful in the Hulk Hogan litigation in picking a lawsuit where the fight was over privacy. We did not even bring a libel action because that was sort of the way I wanted to make clear in the Hogan case that it was not about the media. It was not about the media more generally.
Are you engaged in any other lawsuits against news organizations?
I've been involved in the Gawker case, nothing else. And part of my thought was, again, they were a singularly.
Pause it. Go back. Let's see how he evaded that question. Oh, incidentally, he hid his involvement in this case, right? I mean, so the big principle that he was trying to push, he was a little bit more embarrassed about it until it was exposed that he was bankrolling this. Go ahead.
It was not about the media. It was not about the media more generally.
Are you engaged in any other lawsuits against news organizations?
I've been involved in the Gawker case, nothing else. And part of my thought was, again, they were a singularly sociopathic bully. My view is that other journalists, other media organizations,
bully says
were
what?
Not remotely in the same ballpark.
Tell us how you got involved, and especially how and when you got connected to Charles Hardner, Hulk Hogan's lawyer in the Gawker case, and why you did this, you know, secretly.
Well, it was a multi-year. And I'd be a little bit careful what I comment on this, since the litigation is still ongoing. But I got involved over a number of years, and it was one of these things where, as you got involved, you came to believe in the justice of the case more and more because there were so many different people that you interacted with who had been destroyed. You know, in many cases, in most cases, it was not super prominent people. It was or super wealthy people. It was people who couldn't afford to do anything. You know, and one of the striking things is that if you're middle class, if you're upper middle class, if you're a single digit millionaire like Hulk Hogan, you have no effective access to our legal system. It costs too much.
You know, if you're not super wealthy, you can't destroy news organizations that write articles you don't like. I mean, think about it.
I mean, I just don't know how disingenuous that guy. I mean, it's just stunning. That's just stunning.
Am I funding more law? Yes, I am. Sue them all. I hope all journalists become poor, tired, and broke.
I'm involved. I've got to be very careful here. But I will say, if anybody exposes what I'm doing, nice publication you write about it in. It would be a shame if something got
When you're trying to do a private orchestrated destruction of the First Amendment and all of its protections, you have to be somewhat subtle about it. Now, that said, if you report on this, well, like, you know, the consequences. Poor people are gross.
He definitively said that he was not involved in any other litigation aside from Gawker.
He did.
Yes, he did. He
play it again.
He hedged and hedged, he said, beside the Gawker lawsuit, no.
Okay. Play it again.
lawsuit where the fight was over privacy. We did not even bring a libel action because that was sort of the way I wanted to make clear in the Hogan case that it was not about the media. It was not about the media more generally.
Are you engaged in any other lawsuits against news organizations?
I've been involved in the Gawker case, nothing else. And part of my thought was, again, they were
okay.
A singular.
First off, he says the Gawker case, right? So the multiple lawsuits that he was behind against Gawker are included in that. And then are you engaged? He's saying in the past tense, he was involved in the Gawker case only. He's not unequivocally saying anything about I'm not funding other lawsuits. He said, I'm not engaged. That doesn't mean that he's not funding other things. It's not unequivocal. There is definitely wiggle room there.
Looks like we have a clever Jew on our hands who had a really promising little internet startup. Say goodbye.
Exactly.
By the way, I don't like that impression either. You're both gross.
I'm not. Let me just make this clear to Peter Thiel. I'm not sanctioning the impression. That's Michael's.
And
I
want to make clear
his address.
That I am not sanctioning, first of all, that because of Sam's own Peter Thiel-like practices, there's less to take away from me than Sam. You could literally destroy his whole home and family, so there's a fatter target. And also,
well, no, he could destroy. Yeah. He could destroy you too. He
well, I know. No,
target.
I'm saying if he want, well, he could destroy both of us. But if you're talking about prioritizing, I would. And also, Sam is the one making a much more substantive critique of you. I'm just doing a puerile routine. So, go to the heart of it.
Conversely, if you want to have an agent inside the office, I have a lot of student loan.
And if you want a tireless defender, you probably don't even need to pay. Kelly's here.
Oh, come on, Kelly. Thank God for Andy and the Good Liars. Great pick for today. You have to check that Dothout piece from last week. I won't. These Republicans who are scared now but cannot admit their contribution to the current state of democracy infuriate me. I'm saying the same thing you just said, only a way to wrestle policy apparatus for Clinton is to deliver real big progressive items. Deuce, weird that the FBI, KKK, KGB all like the same candidate, along with Tom Brady. Stop it. Deuce McDaily, dang, I was just in New York for a job interview, and I was there, I got a tattoo, went fishing, and did a little film editing. So much time and money wasted grabbing lifts all over town, finding each individual thing. Oh, yeah, Jimmy Reefer Cake song. Geez, sorry about that. Nobody told me.
It's a reality TV duopoly, it's called.
Okay.
Matthews, Chris, this is my studio. Chill out, bro, okay? Right. Hey, everybody, this is live.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Bob Dylan.
Hey, Jimmy.
Yeah, buddy. Good to have you here in the studio. Nobel Prize winner.
Reefercake, you got the lyrics, man.
Oh, come on, dude. You got the lyrics.
Hey,
Matthews.
All right. I'll play one for you. Yeah, here we go.
Shut the fuck up, Matthews.
Foregone conclusion of democracy is born out in this corrupted duopoly. Without some real competition, there's no one fighting for our mission. This is just reality TV here. Politicians pissing in each other's ears, making deals in the commodities fear. Later on, they'll all have a laugh and a beer. Later on, they'll all have a laugh and a beer. They all blame the Greens and the Libertarians. They fear if they get a chance, this duopoly ends. And you gotta admit, for Libertarians, there's an irony in how that story ends. What sets the Libertarian Party free is the funding that they get from the taxes on you and me. It's just reality TV here. Politicians pissing in each other's ear. Making deals in the commodity is fear. They're on, they'll all have a laugh and a beer. All right, Jimmy.
Thank you, Bob Dylan. And, yeah,
right.
Sorry about Chris Matthews.
He's all right, Jimmy.
Stoned off his ass.
It's good. I like Chris. He's cool.
Wow. That was a weird one.
All right. I guess
multiple tracks.
Election is affecting people in a lot of different ways.
Right, I think he's got whatever Gary Johnson has.
Jimmy Reefer Cake. Benjamin Branklin. Do polls factor in the Trump campaign's historically weak voter turnout machine? They don't. There's really no way to measure that. It's really not clear. BB Teach. Hey, guys. Making calls Monday at my teacher's union office. Everybody who would be horrified at a Trump presidency needs to do a little extra this time. Planning ahead. If things don't work out, I could be your Iceland correspondent. Bigly MR fan. Standing in line to vote. Phone to ear in North Carolina. Thank God I have the show to listen to while waiting. Thanks, everyone. Good for you. Candy Kane. Cliff's wrong in thinking a few Republicans will join the Dems in the Senate to pass legislation. I agree with you. Bull Progs. Does Sam intentionally mispronounce some people's names as a sly jab, or is this an honest mistake? Honest mistake. Noticed it before, like when you pronounced Chaliza instead of Kaliza. Did I do a Chaliza?
I think you got it right last time.
I thought I got it right.
Did Deuce mispronounce nutraceuticals on purpose? Because that was hysterical.
There are times I've done that in the past. Like, particularly on AM radio. I used to call Bill Freist.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Because he had a Freist-like ability to diagnose Terry Schiavo from a distance. And I used to accidentally call them rape publicans.
I remember that one.
Carl Sagan, if Florida is called early in the evening for Clinton, it's pretty much over, right? Yes. An Obama strategist said on Rachel that over half the expected turnout has already voted in that state and it's looking good already. Does this mean anything? I don't know. Joseph Pollitt, Sam, how did it come to this? Two corrupt oligarchs who should both be in jail are running for the office presidency. I admit Trump is far worse neo-fascist serial rapist who's pushing. But what is the law that Clinton has broken? Sam, I'm just curious. What is the law that Hillary Clinton has broken? Sam Johnny, I got into an argument with my mother last night. She said polls are worthless for determining who will vote and that baby boomers aren't polled well and they're a silent majority that will elect Trump. Well, it's weird that did not show up in the primary polling, but maybe. Can boomers flip this election? Is there truth to her reasoning? I don't know why boomers would be hard to poll. And I think, I don't think so. SBG, Sam, I want your prediction. If all the networks call for Clinton, will Trump give a concession speech? I don't think so. I think he either tries to do it while she's speaking or he refuses to concede and then tweets it out like 48 hours later. Triggered Trump, or maybe he comes out and says this election's rigged, but I don't think so. I think he would have to wait, right, until the next morning because this is a little rigged. Skype isn't letting me call in. Being abroad, I get all my updates from Real Clear Politics and Nate and you guys. RCP is making me freak out because Clinton is one flipped Florida away from losing. Well, we got Sam Wong on Monday, so. Hector, the way he is, it's more like Kim Jong-un with all these stories about how he's the best and great at everything. Schloop, I tell all my friends they have to listen to the Majority Report, the best daily 3-hour political podcast out there. The show today would have made me a subscriber if I wasn't already. Love the good liars and everyone else. Keep up the good work. Thank you. Neff, friendly reminder requested since y'all are taking 24-hour shows. November 17th is the show's 5th anniversary, and you did say you wanted to do another 17-hour show this year. Just saying. Eric from Minneapolis is an imposter. Q of Perry Mason. All right. We're going to do one call, and then we'll do one more IM and get out of here. 3 IMs. You're calling from a 419 area code. Who's this?
This is Peter Thiel, and I'm calling.
That's not going to be the last call. Sorry, buddy.
Sorry, sir. You will also be sued.
808. Who's this? 808.
Hello. Calling from a 419 area code. Who's this?
All right. Can't do it. All right. Two more IMs. Jonathan Rinn. Today, Rudy Giuliani, a member of the Trump campaign, confessed on television he was getting inside information from FBI agents about investigations. When can we expect a joint investigation by the National Counterintelligence and Security Center launch an official insider threat investigation into Giuliani's FBI source? Yeah, that seems to be violations of the Hatch Act, like you say, federal law and FBI policy. Indeed. One more. Petrus. Sometimes you frustrate me, Sam. Big league. I warned off what you and Cliff discussed today nearly a year ago. You derided me then. Here's my question. In the event we have a variation of the 2000 election and the Supreme Court needs to intercede, who do you see most likely to flip toward the Democrats? I have no idea. I'll be voting for the Whore of Babylon and other urge to do likewise. If she wins in a close election, there's an upside to the deal. Will she have to adhere to a liberal or agenda or maintain support from the center left, which she will need to survive a Republican onslaught? And I will talk more about it Monday. See you then. It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gone.